Hey!
All right. Welcome, everybody. Belated Strike and Mike this week. For obvious reasons, we wanted to, one, Striker had Gemma Rudolph's plumbers visiting his house yesterday.
Yep.
And
yep.
Two, we did want to actually let the NJP speech get out there before
they're
we did
my house
another
crushed
episode.
Blue.
Yeah. they had to use strong chemicals to wash that off the walls.
Prussian blue removers. That's what they were. They weren't plumbers.
They're wearing, whatever. Anyway. So we also wanted to let the speech get out there and get some reactions to it. And we have gotten that. It's been overwhelmingly positive reactions, which is great. But I guess we should clear up a little bit about what we are doing with the National Justice Party, what our mission is. I know the website, we're going to get more information up there stuff up there in the future. But, you know, we're just so busy. We have so much stuff to do on all fronts. But we will be updating that fairly regularly. But I guess we want to clear up some of the questions that have arisen. The first one is that, you know, I am not running for president, and if that were to ever happen, it's not going to be happening this election. We would be too late for any federal filing anyway. But the election system in this country, part of the reason we're doing what we're doing, the electoral system in this country is literally set up to make anything but the major, and it's not a news to a lot of people, but it's important to understand. It's set up to make it impossible.
Exactly.
And the media system in this country is also set up to make it impossible, because anybody other than the major two-party candidates are presented as not serious or almost even illegitimate, and then they're not given space. And there's no – the political – it's interesting how the political process itself is not in any way protected as being – legitimate or not totally corrupt by any laws in this country. I mean, campaign finance and shit, all that stuff is just gotten around. And then ballot access is just made stringent so that you can't get anybody else.
Yeah, this isn't a real democracy. You know, I mean, one issue that we should take up is the idea of reforming the system into a proportional democracy so that we can actually have parliaments.
Yes.
And stuff. That's what those are.
We're going to have a plank on that, on how to reform the electoral system itself in the platform when we release it in November at our next meeting. But the purpose of the National Justice Party is to provide a place, a vehicle for people to gather around, show support, and have through series of events and meetings, press these issues, gather support, and try to gather a mass movement behind the ideas of essentially white nationalism, but not just white. It's actually not just white nationalism. White nationalism combined with some fundamental ideas of how our system is unjust, flawed, and in fact, immoral, that we want to rectify.
And there are many, many issues bundled into what we're about, and it's intended to solve numerous problems. Because, see, what a lot of WNs don't understand is that many people have racialist feelings, but the problem is it's in their top five, but it's not their number one.
Yeah.
And so you have to have answers for other problems they have in their lives, whether they're economic problems, whether they're social problems. People are upset about the fall of the family, drug abuse,
total immorality of the elite,
transgenderism, the fact that our government is like basically politicians on both sides were all at the same Epstein party.
Yeah, the fact that we have
we shouldn't even call them the Democrats or Republicans.
It's the Epstein party.
The Epstein party.
That's actually some fantastic rhetoric. I'm going to incorporate that. I didn't even think of that until from now on in my speeches, I'm going to call this the Democrat Republican complex the Epstein party, because that's what it is.
The Epstein party.
And then and other things like the total hegemony of these massive monopolistic corporations that just like run all. And the thing is, it's like, okay, I understand there are some actual advantages to that. Like a lot of products are available at good prices and easy to get, but then they also have total power. And so the people that run those things effectively can now decide, like Amazon, it's very convenient. They've got all these books that you could want is very cheap, but now they get to decide what people read.
Mm-hmm.
That can't be allowed to happen.
Right.
Cannot
they get
be allowed
to
happen.
They get to decide who you can donate to charity to. Actually, yes. The SPLC decides that.
And the ADL
ADL. And when Jeff Bezos was asked about that, he's like, yeah, I understand some of the problems with that, but he's still doing it.
But so what? Like, he doesn't, it's like for him, it's like, as soon as I've dismissed this question, and now I just move on to whatever, going to whatever party I'm going to go to with, you know.
Who elected him? Well, that's my question.
Nobody
Who the fuck elected him as the guy who gets to decide what you can read?
Well, the conservatives would say, well, you won out in the marketplace. It's like, well, did he?
Well, winning in the marketplace, I mean, the only thing Jeff Bezos did that was particularly special was that he was the first one to get there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's actually the story for most monopolies, that you're just – There's nothing amazing or groundbreaking about Facebook. It's the most basic fucking.
It's actually very. You could write it like an amateur PHP programmer could write the fundamental basic Facebook functions themselves. They really could.
Mark Zuckerberg had the connections to capital to raise capital, the connections to Ivy League institutions.
Well, you know, it's funny. He didn't even start it.
Right.
The Winklevoss twins started it, and he ripped them off, and he got just the Jewish legal system to rubber stamp the fact that he ripped them off because he's Jewish. Right. I mean, let's be honest.
Right. Yeah. And that's also another thing that gives people an unfair advantage is that if you're Jewish, you have connections to networks.
You have 6 million steps up on everybody else in society if you're Jewish. You get favors, you get privileges, you get connections, you get your projects funded. I can't tell you. There's a lot of Jewish kids I knew growing up who always seemed to have like some dumb art project or some film project, some stupid hobby shit they're doing. They just people just gave them money to do it. And I didn't understand why that was until later on.
Yeah. I mean, look at Laura Loomer.
Yeah.
She got a shout out from President Trump. Chris Kobach didn't get that.
Yeah. Chris Kobach didn't get that. Arguably, here's the thing. Chris Kobach is ideological. And seemingly, you know, principled. That's why, I mean, obviously he must be principled because he's frozen out of the GOP, right? So he's ideological principled, but he's not a fucking clown. Right. Laura Loomer is none of those things. She's not ideological. She's not principled, and she is a clown.
Yes.
Yet she gets these shout-outs.
Yeah. She was able to outraise the other Republicans by a lot. She's actually she's competitive against the Democrat. And it's mostly because the people that fundraised for Trump, the Jews that fundraised for Trump, were giving her money.
Yeah, they were pouring money into her.
These are the unfair advantages. And notice, like, the hit pieces and all that, they seem to dry up. Yeah.
They seem to dry it up.
She's got the connections. And so that's not fair. And so that needs to change. You know,
if you wonder why it is that the typical Antifa press, like the Daily Beast and such, who you would think would be ripping her a new one in their headlines is just hands off. Well, it's because her cousin is probably best friends with the editor or something. Like, they have all their connections, and they actually, it's self-conscious for them, and it's they know exactly what they're doing, and they can place phone calls and give just lay off this, lay off that. We want this. That's how they operate.
You call your cousin who's funding the SPLC and say, hey, no more hit pieces. Yeah. Or some of your donors have someone in there, and they say, more hit pieces.
It's the same donors.
Yeah.
It's the same donors.
That's how this actually works. And again, that creates a lot of problems electorally. It's not democratic. It creates a nation within a nation. And what we want is for us to be able to be protected as equal, just equally.
Yes.
Under the Civil Rights Act, we just want the equal protections. That's it. There's nothing crazy or insane about that. So, you know, that's what it is. All the demands are sensible. You know, it's not about hate or anything like that. Like, they're going to try and make it, but.
And also we're not LARPing, and we're not going to be overly grandiose and unrealistic. Like, let's be honest. If I were to run for president, it would be stupid. It would just be dumb, right? Like, if I were to say, I'm intervening in this presidential election and vote for me, like, one, nobody would do it, right? Even people that like me probably would be like, oh, I'm just gonna, yeah, that's great, thanks, you know? It would just be dumb. It would be, and it would take a lot of effort. It would take time, money, people would have to volunteer and do stuff that ultimately just went nowhere.
Right.
And so I'm not going to do things that are a waste of time and energy and aren't going to lead to any kind of result. And I'm realistic about the fact that that's not a battle that can be won right now. We need to build a mass movement of people committed to these ideas that can see a possible future for these ideas, a possible nation that we can create
Yes.
And then we can intervene in all of these kinds of ways.
Exactly.
Politically. That's the purpose. You can't put the cart before the horse, to use a very old
And you metaphor. Have to start small. Like there are legal battles to be had. There are,
oh yeah, forget about it. Boy, you don't even know like all the crap we've been looking at.
There are symbolic victories to be had. Like for example, just to see the necessity, historical necessity of white advocacy, of nationalist advocacy, is look at that study that CNN published, done by, I believe, George Mason University, claiming that white doctors are murdering black babies. Like, that's what it says. Okay.
That's insane.
Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen that, actually.
Yeah, there's a study CNN was saying is like a black baby is three times more likely to die at the hands of a white doctor than a black one. Now, that's just an evil blood libel.
That's a blood libel, and
that puts every single health professional that
and
works
that's
in
that's
a black
coming out of a serious institution. See, that's coming out of a serious institution. Right. A respected institution is allowed to publish that kind of shit. And right. I guarantee you, if you I haven't looked at it, so I don't know exactly what it says. And I'm actually not even going to hedge this. It's bullshit. You can analyze whatever, arrived at that, and it's total garbage.
Someone already looked at it. They carried a number wrong or something and got
but
to
also,
that conclusion.
How many more white obstetricians are there than black?
Yeah. 95% are
right.
not black.
So you can always fuck around with numbers if that's the case.
Well, why would you do that?
Yeah, why would you do it?
That other than to put these
malicious
health professionals that every day go to work, probably in really shitty environments, to help blacks, and you're putting them in physical danger.
I mean, let's be honest.
Now, some black extremists can go in and be like, yo, you're fucking killing our babies because you're racist, and they're going to shoot them. I mean that's not unrealistic. Look at the stuff that's been going on for the last week. There's like four white people killed randomly by blacks.
Yeah.
Mostly women and children.
Yes.
And then, of course, there are infinite others that were assaulted, like the man in the truck in Portland. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just
and nobody will take up for these people.
Out of control.
That's the thing. Nobody.
This builds anti-white hatred.
Yes, and if there's not a response, like we need this country to know, to be on notice that we exist, we're out there, and when these things happen, we are going to be calling it out and putting pressure. You cannot simply let white people go unmentioned. You cannot let white people just be abused and attacked and libeled.
And
we will
say,
see every instance
say
of this.
White people are murdering black babies.
You cannot say that. It's not true.
It's not true.
And I know there have been in the past like antisocial, probably like God even knows some of them maybe fake or whatever, like real like just stupid. You should be doing no fuck that. That's stupid. That's fucking retarded.
Play into their hands when you are
openly and obviously degenerate and immoral. Like you play right into their hands. I mean, Jews want to murder all whites, but they're not out there talking about it. In fact, when we catch them saying it, we score a victory.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Think of how them speaking candidly about these things is such useful recruiting.
Whenever they get caught
Barbara Spector, Barbara Spector, who is probably like just a mid-tier Jew in Sweden.
Yeah.
That quote of hers has like been etched into the memories of millions.
Oh yeah, and I mean her face. She can't really operate because her face is so known.
She's a meme.
Even boomers. Yeah, she's a meme. She became a meme. She memed herself.
Yeah, boomers.
Mean, boomers see that this? Like, wait, what? Excuse me.
I support Israel, but what the fuck is this?
Yeah. Well, I think that's actually a bit overblown how much they support Israel.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, I was speaking with somebody who spent the last week with boomers and like Midwest, middle of the country, flyover country boomers. And they do have their they've got their views, they've got the shibboleths, if you will, that they believe in, but like supporting Israel just really isn't one of them. It's more that they're like, oh my God, they're mad as hell about the anarchists tearing down everything in the country. They don't really they think Trump is doing something about it. That's the problem. They actually think Trump is doing something about it when he's not. And they actually, for better or for worse, are really triggered by the word socialism. But to them, what that really means, I mean, the thing is, what's the substance of that when they say that? They don't really actually mean socialism. because, I mean, in terms of how it's been historically understood, because they are actually benefits of socialist programs like Medicare and Social Security. And they don't, they're never going
to
give those
and
up.
And they don't want them to go.
And I'm not going to be the whole call them hypocrites on that. The point is that for them, what they mean is the reign of people that are hostile to them.
Yes.
That is what they understand it to be. They're like, if Joe Biden gets elected, socialists will be totally empowered. And by that, they just mean all these people in the street burning shit down, these people that hate us for our race. But there's one thing. They are starting to be willing to understand it racially. That's the one thing. That's the one thing that this person told me that was with boomers all week, is that they actually don't push back at all on racial talk. They understand that it's true. Now, you could say, okay, boomers or whatever, but there's a lot of them. I mean, they're not going to necessarily be like, you know, you at least want them to support you. At least. So, and they do have problems with what they think. They got a lot of shibboleths that have been put in their mind by the Finkelthink and the Boomer Bart stuff, but understand.
They've been taught to connect socialism with Black Lives Matter and Antifa.
Yes.
And that's not entirely true, because those people don't really have
any
class demands.
No.
They actually are perfectly willing to side with capital against class whites. I mean, they've said this.
Well, capitalism, I mean, as we showed in the intro video, we on purpose showed these kinds of clips in that intro video before the speech, which we played on Tedious on Monday. If you we took it off of our site, but you can still see it on Tedious's Monday show, or hear some of the clips from it. But there was that one announcer that was talking about how all these companies are pledging money and lining up behind Black Lives Matter. Right. So, sure, you know, I don't even want to argue with a boomer over terminology, but it's important to understand that when they say that, what they mean is, you know, and of course Republicans will use that to be like, yeah, you hate socialism, so let's get rid of your Medicare and Social Security. But, oh, yeah, the anarchists and Black Lives Matter, we're going to leave them be. You know, we'll just let them keep going, because they're not socialist, actually.
Right. Exactly. You know, it's interesting, too, because if you look at, you know, Seattle, for example, the site of a lot of these riots, that's actually the home of that's where, like, Amazon keeps its headquarters and shit. And you don't see them rioting outside of there. Like, you don't see them saying, oh, we need to, you know, redistribute the money in Amazon, or we need to tax them more or anything. They might do that kind of like a Finkelthink, like, you know, like an issue to recruit people with. But in practice, you only see them activated with racial stuff.
Yep. That's
and
exactly
and
right.
sexual stuff as well.
Yep.
Aside from that, though, they don't really, you know, you don't see them organizing workers at Amazon to fight the factory owner or the warehouse owners and stuff.
Nope.
So this is kind of why they're the enemies of the working class, frankly, and they think they're coming to terms with that.
They always have been. I mean, historically, that's what anarchists have always been. But
look at Peter Kropotkin. He was a prince.
Yeah.
He's a prince. You know, Peter Kropotkin, you know, sometimes we'll be like scratching our heads at anarchists that are upset that Trump is pulling troops out of Syria. I remember when they were mad about that. I'm like, this is nothing new with anarchists in particular. You know, Peter Kropotkin actually was an anarcho-communist, and he supported World War One. He was a big advocate of World War One. You see this also with other figures. You know, they come from elite backgrounds, and they stick with their class interests or their Jewish interests. And so the point is, though, is that anarchists, because they don't have an ideological center, they're very malleable to whatever the flavor of the week is, to whatever the guy with the amplifier has. And so, you know, in Portland and Seattle, some of these anarchists, they have tattoos on their faces and they look crazy, and a lot of them are drug addicts and shit. They're still activated by these elite entities that know how to trigger them. You know, they know how to now, here's another thing, though. It does seem like some of the institutions are starting to distance themselves from them. I'm talking like Joe Biden-style liberal institutions are starting to back off. And frankly, it's because you can't support these people and win an election. You can't.
Right. And also you can't just pretend like it's not happening. Like they've been trying to do that. I mean, the whole mask controversy, which we're not going to talk about, but that was developed to give people that are typically engaged in like the party political process, like another thing to fight about.
Why?
Because they don't want to make liberals defend the Antifa and they don't want conservatives attacking it. So they want conservatives and liberals fighting over like Dr. Fauci and Trump. And I would see the stories like seeded into my Google News feed, which I check mainly so I can know what gay op the elite is running today. Like, what is the Finkel think that they want you talking about today? And you go and you look at Google News and like the top five stories will all be about ginning it up. It's really become blatant in the last few years too. It didn't used to be, or maybe I didn't notice it as much, but I think it's really come straight up. Like, I read the top headline on Google News, whatever it might be. It's always from the same like five or 10 sources. And it's like designed to create a fight between liberals and conservatives. It's literally designed to do that. It's structured exactly to do that. And then you always get like nine liberal headlines and one conservative headline. And it's like, it's all fucking, it just looks to me now when I see this stuff, it just looks to me like one group is planning this. It's not two different groups planning this.
It's kind of interesting. So I was watching a very good documentary called The Swamp. It's on HBO. Mm-hmm. It's one of the few documentaries that doesn't have over-the-top editorializing about racism and all that. Like, it's kind of objective. It's about Matt Gaetz and Thomas Massey and kind of like their little fake populist thing. And what's interesting is that they actually studied the media before 2002 and 2003. And they found that, you know, what you get on CNN would be kind of – when it came to the facts – it was usually free of editorializing. I mean, they had their biases and prejudices as always, but the intense attempt to polarize the country came around 2003, and that's when they started the message you'd get on Fox News and the message you'd get on CNN start to radically diverge, you know, and so. If you have a country where no one can agree on what exactly the truth is because one or both sides is lying, which is – they're all guilty of it. They're lying to increase polarization. You can't run – you can't have a functional country. And what's funny is one of the guys says that this is actually what the elites want, is that they actually want a government – and a country where nothing ever gets done because they're happy with the status quo. They're happy with business as usual. Yeah. And so by breeding this kind of intense partisanship, they can actually avoid governance.
Yep.
Like the government can't govern because the Congress is in total stasis. It can't get anything done because of this partisanship. And so that's kind of what the elites are happy with. Because
and then there are things that they're – I mean, George Carlin used to be a real shitbag in some ways, but he did say some very true, funny things. One of the things he said is like when there's bipartisanship – he says when there's unusual bipartisanship, you can be sure that there's unusual – I don't know what the word he used, like unusual, like trickery, unusual mendacious. Yes. He had a better word because, unusual gay ops are going down. And of course, the other thing is we also know Israel never up for debate.
No.
Anything for Israel is never up for debate. Sure. They just leave that out.
The Democrats in particular, there's a lot of pressure amongst their voters to take a harder line against Israel and they just won't do it. Okay, and so like this is kind of how you know,
and they get out of it by when they feed the Finkel thing to their constituents, they just leave all that stuff out. They feed them stuff. Oh, look at the racists and bigots in the GOP. Oh, look at the dumb thing that Trump said today. Oh, look, this Trump advisor's in jail. This Trump advisor's in jail. This guy, you know, basically that's what they feed them, and they never.
Russia.
But they manage to avoid all the stuff that Trump does for Israel. They never said, like, hey, you know, it's pretty freaking crazy for Trump to rubber stamp all the stuff that the Likud party is doing in Israel.
Illegal settlements.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Democrats on paper are supposed to be against that. And yet Trump is, like, intensifying that exponentially. There's another thing that happened recently where the Trump administration got – Israel to become make some kind of formal alliance with the United Arab Emirates.
Oh boy, yeah, this is just basically fucking over the Palestinians.
Right. I mean, so why are you so mad about Trump making some extending an olive branch to Russia or even North Korea? And then you turn around and you don't say shit about him.
No, he got accolades for it universally.
Getting Israel like aligned when with liberal two media, of the most oppressive governments in the world, which is Saudi Arabia and the UAE.
Yeah, they're total autocracy. It's like literally like one weird Arab pedophile runs like
yeah,
one like incredibly wealthy, you know, paraphiliac runs the entire country. In like a gold plated mansion, you've got like children chained up, and like that's the person running
the country. It's like a low IQ Tony Montana runs fucking whole country.
Yeah, and like, it really is that bad. Yeah, and yet we're supposed to be like congratulating him on this. And you know, Jazz Hand said something really smart on the midweek FTN. He said like, you know, you always got to look at these Trump executive orders and executive actions that he takes, because he's like, when it's something that's supposed to help whites, you got to look, and you're going to find out that it's either toothless, or oftentimes it even actively undermines through technicalities. It undermines exactly what it's supposed to be doing. But then when it comes to Israel, it's the opposite. It's like it's good optics, but it's really hardcore jignadism underneath.
Yeah.
So like the good optics is reaching a historic peace deal between two nations unfriendly to each other. It's a big achievement for the president, right? Everyone applauds, right? Stand up and clap. But underneath, it's just pure jignat stuff.
Well, another thing, too, is that Jews themselves, Jewish advocacy groups, are writing this legislation for them.
Yeah.
So that's
Well, they write both sides of it. I mean, we found this out with the ADL.
If people are curious, if they didn't know, we already have a sense of it. But if you want to know like how the sausage is made, as they say in Washington, watch The Swamp. You'd be astonished at how fucking corrupt all of these politicians are.
It's like, totally. And honestly,
they have some technicality where they have the Republican National Committee and the Democratic National Committee. And basically what politicians do all day, sometimes they'll skip votes in the House and the Senate to meet with donors to get them to write legislation for them and tell them what to do. Like they can't move an inch without their donors telling them, lobbyists and donors. Of course, they'll say, like the coal lobby and things like that. But come on.
Yeah.
There's bigger, better.
We know what the
Washington.
Other lobbies are. And it's, dude, it still blows me away that there are certain people that have, you remember Destiny, like, well, yeah, but lobbying, that doesn't really affect government. Okay, guys, sure. Like,
it's
I can't even,
it's
can't
all
even,
they
can't
do.
Even take that seriously now. You just can't be taken seriously.
And another thing they'll do is that when there's something really, like, undeniably, universally popular, they'll vote in a majority for it, but they'll always be one vote short. Like, for example, there's a law that they passed in the House that got to Congress to end private donor-run candidates. So, for example, the government would match with public funds and actually give you a publicly funded campaign so that the corruption just isn't there, right? But it passed in the House easily. And then when it got to the Senate, it actually passed with a majority, but they didn't have enough of a supermajority. They were like one or two votes short of a supermajority to make it law.
Yeah, there's some things – I don't know all the ins and outs. There's some things you need two-thirds of the Senate for. And
right.
Like,
so they always do this. And the guy said, you know
– Well, dude, they did that. That's the shit they did forever to not build a wall in Trump's first 2 years. Yes. Trump had they put forward – and again, it's all show. They put forward actually very strong like National Security or Homeland Security Act or something that had all this stuff about deporting illegals and building a wall and all this like real – all the Trump campaign promises. Right. And they couldn't get it through because they needed a two-thirds majority. And everyone's like, now they could do what they call the nuclear option, where they vote in all they need a bare majority to change the rules so that those things can be passed with a majority. And then they always pretend like doing that is like such a big step, because if you do it, then when you're out of power, the other party can do it. And right. I'm like, yeah, but you got 4 years here, just fucking do it. And everybody was like, are they going to nuke the Senate? Are they going to nuke the Senate? So that this like National Security Act that included all of these really hardcore provisions on immigration, but they never did. Right. And like the whole Finkelthink and the sort of thing you were talking about. See, the other thing though, the Republicans actually wasn't Finkelthink, because they weren't talking about it. We were talking about it when people were still like iffy on Trump. Like, is he going to do this or not? Or what's going to happen? You know, people were like, and then of course people were blaming Mitch McConnell. They're like, Mitch McConnell needs to do this. He's got to do this. Right. But then of course, they just don't do it. like they in the end they just don't do it. How do we get two-thirds majority
in the,
for that?
They made it very clear. They said, yeah, this time the Republicans fumbled the ball on purpose, but he said if the Democrats were in charge of the Senate, they would have done the exact same thing.
Of course.
They both eat from the same trough, and they don't want publicly funded elections.
They've got their issues. This is the other thing that's important to understand. It's not that the Democrats – this is why it's not partisan, because it's not like the Democratic Party just like wins all the time and the Republican Party loses all the time. Republican Party doesn't lose all the time.
They did not have – the Senate and the House for like 45 years until Newt Gingrich in the 90s. So,
well, let's give an example. Like, what's something that the Democrats really have wanted more so than like punching Nazis in the face? Because that's not even a thing. That's like an extremist thing on the fringes. They've wanted public health care my whole life. Real suburban liberals and the types of people that read the New York Times and these people have wanted a national healthcare system.
Right.
One-payer system where everybody gets coverage, everybody can go to the doctor.
Or at least a public option.
Something like this.
Yeah.
They have wanted for so many years, and they have many times had a governing majority in House and Senate and President. They could have done it. They could have done it, yet they never have.
Yeah.
And they've always found a way.
They actually play off of each other. The Democrats and Republicans to get the corruption in. So, for example, when Obama took power, he had the House and the Senate, he had a congressional majority. They had just like Trump the first 2 years. They had the whole thing.
They could have done whatever they wanted. Yeah,
done, but they waited. They waited.
And Obamacare was a shit show. It wasn't. Yeah. It was just a giveaway to insurance companies.
And of course, they can blame with the Finkel thing. They can blame the Republicans as they're like
Republican intransigence.
The Republicans had to have a profit motive. We had to make compromises. And I'm like, well, you just didn't want to do it because you take money from pharmaceutical companies too.
Right.
So like, you know, but that's the thing. I think more and more people are realizing this. Someone was in a documentary.
It's become real freaking obvious in the last few years how bad this is.
Congress has like a single digit approval rating.
Oh yeah.
And the worst part of all is that these guys don't even care. Like, they don't even give a shit because the two-party system.
What do they care? There's like 435 people in the House. The fuck do they care if they've got a law? I mean, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right? It's easy for you to disapprove of that because nobody – I mean, yeah.
They have a two-party system that guarantees that they won't ever be held to account until someone gets the thing to challenge them politically.
And it effectively freezes out actual ideological opposition groups.
Oh, right.
Like real ideological groups have to be sort of herded into a faction in one party or the other where they can just get excluded. And now they will allow anarchists. Like this is the thing, like the left, the Democrats, they allow like anarchist groups to operate and stuff like that, but they're doing the elite bidding. They're attacking nationalists.
Right. As soon as they get off the chain or off track.
But they're not going to get any political. I mean, they get. Okay. So what are they? They're actually, the demands are very well in line with elite ideology. So it almost seems like they will just get what they want. But I was going to say, like, to the extent any of them have any kind of leftist or like actual old school like pro worker, but they don't really even have, they've shed all that, so it's kind of stupid. Yeah. They're just now like openly anti-white gay right warriors. Like they just go out and do violence for like trans, pedophiles, homosexuals, and against white people. Like that's just what they do.
Another fascinating thing about how Congress works is that I didn't know this, but apparently the biggest prize you can get is to be on a committee. Because that's when the money starts pouring in. When you're on the Means and Ways Committee, you know, doing tax policy and shit like that, of course, you're going to get lots of money pouring in from special interests. But what's interesting is that – here, listen to this. So since Newt Gingrich got into power, they set new rules in the Congress where to get – if you get on a committee, there's some kind of weird thing where you suddenly owe your party $100,000. Like you suddenly owe them a shit ton of money just by being placed on a committee. And so that actually incentivizes corruption.
Yeah, because now you have to pay it off. I mean, I would be interested to see
it off.
Exactly what that How is that even fucking legal?
I don't even know how the fuck that's legal. Yeah, you owe money to your party now as soon as you get on a committee. I don't even know how.
Some arcane fucking rule with
that. It's just insane. Yeah, it's just fucking insane. And so that makes it – so even it, like Matt Gaetz, who seems like – he seems to have presidential ambitions and and he's very dead set on the populist thing.
Because and his son too. But yeah.
And Nestor. Nestor's vice president.
And that,
but he understands that the way to make yourself stand out in the House is by being a dedicated Trumpian populist, right?
Yeah.
And so he's kind of created the whole image around that.
Yeah.
And of course it's cynical, it's careerist, yeah. He's a lick spittle.
It's obviously fake, but that guy.
With that said, he is trying to do that. And he was like saying, he's like, listen, man, I can't not take money at all, because if I don't, like, I can't run for office, because the whole thing is, it hinges upon being able to have the money to actually run against an opponent who will take the money. So again, it's just corruption layered upon corruption layered upon corruption. Again, they seemed pretty adamant about making this about Newt Gingrich, but I'm sure it was happening before that. It was really, well, he said.
Whenever you see that, you can just extrapolate, because it's like, why would it only be Newt Gingrich? Like, why would it just be him? Right? Like, that's the thing. It's like, maybe there's some partisanship, and I would imagine there would be some liberal partisanship in an HBO documentary. But still, like, you can assume everything that they say is done on one side is done on the other. It's a system. Right. It's the Epstein party. It's the
To be fair, that's what they were saying. Yes, the Epstein party. That's actually what they were saying. They're saying, yeah, but Nancy Pelosi's no different.
Right.
Yeah. Paul Ryan was bad. Nancy Pelosi is just as bad. And like the speakers of the I think what Newt Gingrich actually
the thing is, even among liberals, she's not popular. Like, they don't like her. They're even talking about, oh, great, she's going to be it. But of course it's going to be her. So that's the thing. Like, they won't do a dedicated attack on her, but she's kind of an acceptable target. And of course they want to make it. It's interesting. Now, I haven't seen it, but it seems to me they're focusing on individuals when it's a systemic problem. Oh, it's no, not that were, it's Newt Gingrich and Nancy Pelosi.
No, to be fair, they were making it about a systemic problem.
Yeah.
But what they were saying is that Newt Gingrich created the idea that the Speaker of the House is the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one that kind of innovated that somehow the Speaker of the House gets to make decisions for the party.
Usually just before that, it was just a ceremonial role. He's just the guy that bangs a gavel, and that's it.
And it's because the Speaker of the House is the fundraiser. Like, people choose Speakers of the House based on their fundraising capabilities.
Yeah, I think there's also other formalities. Like, they can break ties, and they can they're like the fifth in line for president or something like that, or maybe third, something like that.
I think they might be third.
I think it's third. I think maybe third in line. Yeah.
Right, so Newt Gingrich actually created that the idea that the Speaker of the House's role is to be the party fundraiser, and thus gets to have a veto basically on how people vote. Like, you know, if there's a bill on the table, he gets to actually engineer a vote to make it look a certain way and such. And so this is the problem, you know. I mean, this is why I think political parties in general shouldn't exist. Because this creates all kinds, and it's not because I want to have like a one person government or whatever. But what I'm saying is that political parties introduce an element of needless corruption and partisanship when we can just, you know, all be there without ideology, governing for the best of the nation. You know, that'd be my take on that. You know,
well, I think we now are forced into a position where we have to have a very hard ideological position,
right?
Because it has to be opposed to this. Now they're kind of like non-ideological because it's just like corruption. It also, what it also does is when you have, it's also interesting how as this, now this Washington wasn't always this way. Okay. It has developed, in particular, I would say since really the '60s, it has sort of, this system has developed and coalesced until now it's just a machine that almost runs on its own momentum.
Right.
And the individuals can be swapped out at any point. But that's also why, as that's happened, the media has focused ever more on individuals.
Yes.
Generally speaking, not necessarily this documentary, but generally speaking, it's all about political celebrities and individuals that you either love or hate, or, you know, it's very hard to love any of them. So it's the one that you hate and the one that you're lukewarm on. Right. Like that's how you go for it. And it's always the one is worse than the other. You got to do this. You got to do that. But it's like even some of these ideas of like, oh, the Democrats always run on the Republicans being evil racists and the Republicans run on Democrats being insane communists and stuff. It's all set up. It's all there. And the fact that it's the idea, it's like, okay, we can't always keep, say you're like a party activist. You're like, can't always keep just making it about scare of the other side. You know, we got to develop a platform. It's like people just be like, dude, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, this is how we do this. Like, this is the thing we do. And so this idea that sometimes people have, like, oh, Trump is not going to let elections happen. That's another thing they've always said. Every single president since George W. Bush, I don't think they said this about Bill Clinton. Democrats were saying George W. Bush, like, won't let himself be removed from office by an election. And even back then, I was like, you're fucking crazy. Like, I hated George W. Bush, but I was like, that's stupid, obviously.
Yeah.
He's going to not be president when he...
Yes, the Democrats invoke fascism with the right, and the right invokes communism with the Democrats.
Right.
That's the Finkel think right there. Meanwhile, both ideologies are completely steeled against either.
And
the Democrats and Republicans. Democrats are neoliberals. The Republicans are right-wing neoliberals.
I mean, they're just neoliberals. I mean, but it's really funny this when you get people that are really invested in it. And it's very easy. I think they almost do this on purpose. Because I remember when I found out, you know, George W. Bush doesn't talk like that, right? He doesn't really have that, like, twang to his voice. And Sarah Palin, too. Right. I remember I heard a recording of Sarah Palin.
Well, Sarah Palin talks like this.
Well, she doesn't.
Talks like she's from Fargo.
She doesn't. I remember hearing recordings of her where she...
She actually is from there, from that area.
Well, sure, but... recordings of her from like donor meetings, behind the scenes stuff, where she talks straight. She doesn't have that down homey. Oh yeah, that's a put on. It's an act.
Well, she probably talks with. She probably has uptalk now.
Well, whatever it is. The point is this.
That's the new status.
Status. Yeah. The point is that it's all fake, but it's also designed to trigger. Like when George W. Bush was doing that.
Yeah.
He was triggering people to hate him on the other side as well. That's part of the thing. You are supposed to, and dude, I'm sorry, Donald Trump, the buffoonery. Now, I think in a lot of ways he is a buffoon, but a lot of these statements he makes are, if you look at them, these are like, these are very smart in a way to achieve what they are achieving. Because if they get a certain result, you have to think it could have been. Now, it doesn't always mean it was, but it could have been intended to elicit exactly this result. Well,
that's another thing in the documentary, dude. If you listen to – there's a part where Matt Gaetz is talking to Trump on the phone and they're recording it. Trump sounds totally different on the phone than he does in his speeches. On the phone, he sounds lucid, rapid. He doesn't sound like a dimwit at all. He doesn't be – he's not super repetitive. He's kind of like New York businessman like, and then you listen to his speeches and he's like he kind of sounds like a moron.
He's talking to like fourth graders. I mean, I hate to say it.
Well, that's what he thinks he's doing. But the point is, I don't even think that's for his audience. What that is, it's to trigger the elitism.
Yeah.
In the elites.
Yeah, that's at least part of it.
And that's what makes people mad. I mean, Trump has become a symbol, like him or not, of national populism against the elite. And now that it's an election season, he wants to really play off of that, and they play right into his hands. Yeah. You know, because they can't help themselves, these bourgeois faggots.
Yeah.
Can't help. It's like, oh, Trump talks like a
upper boy. Middle class, bougie liberals, status obsessed, like all the low status.
Like a fourth grader.
Trump puts low status signifiers out there like a juicy red steak for these people, and they just cannot help but go and just eat that up.
Right, and people then go, and these people then go, well, if he talks like an idiot and people still support him, then he's
then they're idiots. Yeah,
then they're idiots. So let's make fun of them for being stupid. And you're like talking about like 60 million people that are going to vote. So like that's how you trap them with the deplorables. That's how he's trapping them now by getting them to say, oh, look at this guy, these dumb controversies, hydrochloroquine, things like that.
And then the demand is, there's a demand put out, you know, the demand of that class of people, the sort of one tier down from the elite supporters of liberalism, you know, like rich up middle class urban professionals and shit like that. Like they demand that the people, that the politicians and stuff, like, attack on those bases. Right. You know, like, they want to see it. And yeah. So it just, everything becomes like, yeah. And it's totally, it's amazing how orchestrated it really is. And when you, yeah. And it's like Trump has these statements that, if you think about it, some of them are actually quite smart, because they're designed exactly to trigger tendencies and shit libs and in nationalists.
Yes.
At the same time. You know, it's like,
no, I can totally see. I mean, I can totally see why people would get trumped again right now. I mean, he's doing the whole bit.
Yep.
You know, remember I told you before, I predicted that Trump would do something, or the Department of Justice would do something against the FBI. Well, they indicted some FBI agent for lying. So he's going away. Of course you see what he's doing with the anarchists. It's all smoke and mirrors, right? Like the he's sending like border patrol guys, like
banning them, I guess, yeah,
and arresting them. They usually don't charge them, but the point is, he's doing that because his audience loves it, and also like it's a popular thing to do. But also like it makes shit libs really mad.
Yeah,
like liberals being upset and triggered. I mean, it's a meme, you know, triggering the libs, but fucking people love that because they correctly. Think of these coastal elites as their oppressor.
Yeah. And so watching here's their oppressors bit.
Lose their shit. And of course they haven't, not all of them have connected this with the Jewish stuff, but the point is they understand that at the very least coastal elites, as they call them, are their oppressor, and they love to see them. They love to see someone at least symbolically strike back at them.
Right. And what happens is then, even I remember when one of the copes that white nationalists had about Trump about a couple years ago, maybe some of them still have it, but I haven't heard it in a while. It seems to have run its course. Was the, well, Trump triggers them. So now, of course, like white nationalists will try and add, you know, white nationalist copers will try and add like a extra ideological layer on top of it. Like why, like triggering the libs is like some brilliant strategy metapolitically or something like that.
Right.
And basically he's going to provoke them into overreaching, and we can use that now. That's not entirely wrong.
No.
But the point is you have to still ideologically separate yourself from Trump and understand he is putting on an act, however good of an act it is. Yes. And there might be things from that act that we can reap benefits from. And that's another reason that they don't like him. I'm not saying it's impossible, but him amping up these factions of people that are really despicable people to just feel completely emboldened and do whatever they want. Like we said, we have a situation. Yeah,
triggering their neuroticism.
Yes. Yeah. Triggering their insanity, their neuroticism, and their vindictiveness, their venality, all of just their worst traits, just making them be openly shitty in front of the whole country is quite remarkable. And we talked about this, how people who say they have conservative beliefs. Now, you know, we could nitpick over that word, but generally speaking, those are people that really have kind of like common sense beliefs about like the family and government and you know, that want just like an orderly, normal system. You know, that's considered conservative. Those people feel like people like don't think trannies should be reading to kids in the library and don't think, you know, think that whites should have an equal chance to get into college, you know, stuff like this, right? Think that it's like okay to say prayers to Christ and things like that, normal stuff. These people are afraid to speak to, 77% of them report being afraid to say what they think in public.
Yep.
Meanwhile, hardcore liberals, not just mainstream, hardcore people that describe themselves as extremely liberal, say they feel no pressure at all, and which is remarkable because that almost contradicts their own ideological flattery of themselves. But
yeah, they feel very comfortable in expressing themselves publicly.
Totally in bold, and they act on that, and you can see it, and that actually can gaslight people into thinking that there are more of those people than there really are because they're so vocal. Because they feel emboldened to be vocal. I mean, that's part of it. They do Now, we've talked about the idea of moral fervor before, and they do have that. It's important that we develop that. But there's also moral fervor plus total safety to say what you want is going to mean everybody's fucking shooting their mouths off, dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you give people with that moral fervor the complete license and backing of the system, they're not only going to shoot their mouth off, they're going to start oppressing other people brutally.
Right, right. Exactly.
So,
and I think people sense that right now. And, I don't know. What do you think? I think Trump is going to win handily, and the Democrats are going to give him the victory. I can't think of any other.
I don't know. I mean,
possibility. You know, I think he's going to win handily. I heard that viewership for the Democratic National Convention, which is, by the way,
dude, it's retarded.
No, it's not retarded. It's fucking out. It's freaky. Like, the average person would see that and be like, "What the fuck is this?"
Well, we addressed this.
I think Cardi B also recently, remember, like, they're taking positions that are like indefensible. Like, you're going to defend Cardi B's wet ass pussy. That's her fucking new hit song. And the Democratic Party, as a political entity,
again,
is
that's
like,
the kind of
why
thing.
Why don't you lighten up? And like Joe Biden, who, like, you know, Tucker Carlson did a segment on this. Joe Biden, who rarely comes out of his room, did an interview with Cardi B. Said, "Hey, I'm Joey B. Maybe we're related." You know, he was like fucking all over that. Like, the message of that song is indefensible. Like, even blacks, that 30 or 40% of blacks who are church going Christians, they're going to be like, "Yo, I don't want this around my kids either." Of course, the person that produced that song is some Jew.
As far as rap music goes, that's not like there's been rap acts that have been doing real raunchy stuff for a long time, but they never made them into political figures. Like, imagine making what was the guy from 2 Live Crew? It's like making Luke from 2 Live Crew into like a political figure.
Yeah, having like presidential candidates interview.
Yeah, it's like here's your interview with Luke of 2 Live Crew. It's like, "So tell me again about that booty and how you want to lick that booty. Tell me again, please, Luke."
That's basically what Joe Biden was doing with Cardi B.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's just unthinkable. How is someone that's running I don't think even Hillary Clinton would do something like that. It's just unthinkable what they're doing with this, and I think it's going to blow up in their face.
Well, did you see that they had like some some black guy in a dress singing "What's Going Down" for their with like Stephen Stills? They got this dumb boomer playing the guitar. I'm wondering if, because again, it's obviously it was all green screen. They probably weren't in the same room when they did it. Did they tell Stephen Stills, like, the guy who's going to be singing, he's actually a black man in a dress? And it's so funny because we were talking about this on TDS the other day. Jesse was a bit like, he wasn't thunderstruck. He's just like, I don't know what they're trying to appeal to. And I'm like, well, how do they stop it? Because I'm like, think about this. If I were to tell you, if I were to ask you the question like 2 weeks ago, are they going to have like a black man in a dress singing songs at the DNC? You'd be like, well, I don't see any world in which they don't.
Right.
Like, how can they not do it? They have to do it. Like, you know, it's impossible for them not to do it. So the question really is, and the answer to that question is because the preferences of the people that run that group are all for that. So you can't be in those circles and say.
Also, more importantly, it's the donors like it.
Yeah. You can't be in those circles and
donate
be the guy.
To the Democratic Party and make this convention happen. Want
like,
that
like
there.
Being the guy that says maybe it's we shouldn't have a black man in a dress singing a song as a representative of our party is like the guy that stops clapping for Stalin.
Yes.
You know? Or stops clapping for Benjamin Netanyahu, like Rand Paul did.
I mean even
you remember
even
when they attacked Rand Paul for yawning and not clapping during a Netanyahu speech? I was like, that was unbelievable. Yes, well, that was a bit of it.
Stop clapping for Netanyahu ain't getting his donations next
year. Yeah, and that was that was on National Review. They did that. You know, the people that hate totalitarianism and communism so much, it was disrespectful. And he also yawned. They had video of him like yawning and clearly not paying attention during all the. Yeah, dude, that didn't elicit a good response.
This man is an elected official, and he's acting like a Bulgarian prostitute.
Yeah,
what the hell is wrong with him? This man is a clock watcher. Why is he in office? So embarrassing.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Do we need people that bring this kind of unprofessionalism? It's like, maybe the speech is boring, dude. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe like, you know, this is like this whole display is embarrassing and disgusting. Like, you know, but the point is though is that when it comes to the Democratic National Convention, that's where you get the most – that's where the pinnacle of freakiness is. I mean, I remember the 2016 one. They had like a dwarf with like cerebral – that. They had like some dwarf with cerebral palsy being like, "Trump is a racist." Like they're doing that shit.
Oh yeah, and they had that fucking. They had that guy, that like foreigner. What was he? Some like kind of Indian, or I think he's Pakistani or something. Yeah, like his Quran and his Constitution in the same pocket, and he's like, "I will show. I want to show Trump what the Constitution is really about." And like that, it's like, dude, shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
I was like, but again, that's also calculated, because think about it. So they're gonna love it, but yeah. Dude, for people that vote Republican, they're gonna be like, what are these foreigner Muslims like? And again, that instinct, again, it's easy to direct, to direct it into Finkelthink, but it's understandable why people see somebody as an obvious alien and foreigner, like taking their symbols and taking ownership of them and using them to attack the person that they think is their representative. It's easy to see why they get mad at that and why they get really upset at it. And it's calculated, because it doesn't upset cosmopolitans, but it does upset normal people.
Right.
And so just continually poking those, like pressing on those buttons.
You know, I don't buy the idea that, you know, I thought briefly that the GOP might be over, but they can actually keep winning elections, at least presidential ones. That's my view on that. I mean, the people they had. So here's a bizarre thing.
Well, they
can
rely on things where they don't need bare majorities. They can win things where they're not going to need a raw majority, like Senate and president. Congress, probably not for a long time, but, you know.
They can keep the Senate.
Unless mass disillusionment happens amongst, you know, liberals and leftists, like the way – and again, this is why – it's also why they do redistricting.
What I was
going to
say is the Democrats, believe it or not, are actually not really embracing the more extreme people in their – like AOC. They're embracing her to an extent. But, for example, she got like a very, very, very short speaking time at the convention. Meanwhile – neocons like Colin Powell and fucking what's that other one? The other neocon, John Kasich.
Oh, yes.
Colin Powell got like really long. They're keynote speakers at the convention.
So and presidential candidate in 2016 for the Republicans is a speaker at the DNC. I mean, yep. I knew he was voting for them and doing all. Yep. Dude, it's
and a rumored candidate at the time, Colin Powell, is also a speaker at the convention. So. The question there is, like, how do people on the left that are still on the fence about Biden, how are they reacting to that?
Yeah, and
you're trying to please everyone and actually pleasing no one, because it's not like John Kasich or Colin Powell have any organic support on the right either.
No, so, that's the funny thing is they're actually – they have no organic support on the right. And Colin Powell, you know, he had – he was sort of like people that liked him. Again, it's the same people that make up the vocal constituency of the Democrat, like upper middle class, urbanite professionals. They liked him because he was introducing like safe diversity into the military. So the military wasn't this white man's like institution where like these commanding white men, most of them from the South, are in charge. Here's this mulatto that's like that like plays to all of their stupid prejudices is in there. And so they liked him. But I'm like, yeah, but dude, that guy went to the UN and made a complete ass of himself. Just right. Blatant lie after blatant lie, and it was embarrassing.
Yeah, I love how being for the Iraq war is a for suddenly
being one of the worst shills for the like going and being and not even selling it. He didn't even sell it. He knew he was lying, and it was obvious on his face that he knew everything he was saying was. It was embarrassing. It was a disaster.
Totally forgiven and forgotten.
And no one's even gonna bring it up. If you bring it up. It's like you're like the guy. It's like, dude, why are you bringing up that old baggage? It's like, well, I don't know. It was pretty fucking important.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Also, remember in 2016 when there was like some general that was at Hillary Clinton's convention, and he gave like this fucking barking like neocon speech.
I vaguely like, remember this. Yeah.
Like threatening the world with military action.
Yeah, very
this
bad.
This is like sandwiched in between like the drag kid performance and like. And Black Lives Matter moms. Yeah. Like, this is like, it's just, again, you know, when something doesn't make sense.
This is why people hate America.
Yeah.
Sorry.
When something doesn't make sense, you have to understand. Like, it's not coherent, right? Because even the ordinary shitlib is like, when they saw that speech, the unthinking cat ladies just went along and clapped. But, you know, the more thoughtful shitlibs that might be for drag kids and Black Lives Matter.
General John Allen.
John Allen, yes, that guy.
Yeah.
That guy, like.
Yeah, yeah, I do remember this now. Oh, and the Constitution guy was Khazir Khan. Yes, who was the one who's like, I wave my Constitution and my Quran in President Trump's face and I remind him of freedom. It's like, shut the fuck up, dude.
Yeah, but John Allen, like, that one is like.
That was remarkable. I remember making a big deal. I forgot about it. I remember making a big deal about it at the time.
Speeches like that
because Trump was running on a peace platform.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's no one like that. He had like Antonio Sabato Jr.
Oh my God.
Dude, we can hire him off Cameo one day.
Yeah, they were also complaining at the Republican convention that Trump was bringing in just like
Z-list celebrities.
Well, Trump was bringing in like just people he knew from New York. Like some dude ran like an industrial siding on buildings just a company in New York. Trump's like brought him in. He was some wop, and he's just like, yeah, I've done the siding on Donald Trump's buildings for years, and like he's a good guy,
great guy.
Yeah, he's great. You know,
doesn't rip anyone off. This bullshit.
Yeah, no, he's just like, yeah, no, we've done deals together. You know what I'm saying? He's just kind of deals, and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just funny. I'm just like, it was really funny, and they were criticizing it. And I was like, that's actually, but again, here's the thing. It pissed the fuck off of these types of all the right people, and it's endearing to all the right people because I was kind of like, I actually kind of like that. He does that. Like, I kind of like that guy. He's like
common.
He has this appeal of like a straight up New Yorker who doesn't give a fuck, and like that's appealing to people.
Right.
But it elitists hate it.
Oh, yeah.
So
why is this guy in politics? Why is this guy doing anything political? Like somehow ordinary people, ordinary white men, working class white men engaging in politics is like the most offensive thing in their sight. And that's something.
Well, that's kind of what they were saying is like this guy has never been anything important. He doesn't have any. It's just it's like he runs a siding company in New York. And it's like Trump did that on purpose. One, because his people like it and you people hate it. So
another factor that might help Trump in this election is the fact that all I don't know if you know this, but the NYPD's union endorsed Trump for 2020. Mm. I don't think they've ever done something like that.
Yeah.
So he's actually cultivating like the endorsements of all these police unions, and those people have families, they have actual supporters. Like no one cares who the teachers union endorses because they're just gonna endorse the Democrat.
Just endorse the Democrat, like straight up, it's never gonna change.
When the NYPD endorses Trump in New York, I mean that's pretty fucking bold.
They've kind of had it. But my thing is, like, NYPD, like, you guys have to think about more than just, like, I mean, obviously, that institution has, you know, but I'm talking to, I don't know, talking to cops, maybe it's a waste of time.
Police Benevolent Association that endorsed
Trump.
It says they broke with traditions 5 days ago. They broke with tradition and endorsed Trump. They usually don't endorse anyone.
Yeah.
That's probably because they're mostly more Republicans.
They all are. I mean, that's the other thing. They're
Republican dads from Long Island and Staten Island.
Right. And because of the way that this breaks down, because of the way that the classes and ideological groups and social groupings break down in America, and the party system is almost created to drive these antagonisms.
Yes.
When, in fact, they don't. Have to be these groups don't have to be antagonistic to each other. There's no reason why kind of like intellectual types have to be at odds with more like grug blue collar types. Why does that have to be that way?
Right.
It's that way. Jews have driven that wedge, and then they make it so intellectuals never want to advocate for these people.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Like the intellectuals then go off into their own.
Yeah, they become NRX types, and that
reaction, the weird reactionaries, or just like over the top for like all these like fringe groups, like you know.
Right now, what's interesting about the NYPD's endorsement of Trump is that the black officers are claiming that they're being undermined by it. But it goes to show you, like, these guys, like, they don't really give a shit. Like, you know, these cops are whatever their flaws may be. They are – the NYPD is basically an instrument of the Israeli government. I mean, when the Beirut bombing happened or Beirut explosion happened, the NYPD put out a statement that says, we are investigating what this is about. I'm like, bro, that's in Lebanon.
Yeah, why the hell would the NYPD investigate that?
We have our eyes open and it's on our radar. I'm like, why? It's in another country. But irrespective of that.
Well, it's understood that the NYPD are they like Jewish Praetorian Guard?
It's like some kind of weird, but it's more, the NYPD is more JGNAT than necessarily. Yes. All right, it's hard.
Well, that's why they would have their eye on Lebanon, right? Because again, because they are JGNAT tendencies, yeah. And those are the type of Jews that they enter. Because again, you know, even Jews have their division of labor among their group, and the people that,
like, Israeli gay ops are usually just like, you can tell, like, all the smart Jews are in the diaspora. Like, like when you see, like, Israel, like, if you want to see, like, a good example, a textbook example of a Israel directed gay op, like, look at someone like Jacob Wool. Like, that, I'm not saying necessarily he's directed by Israel, even if it probably is, but those are the types of antics they engage in, and they're really ineffectual. And diaspora Jews are constantly having to clean up their messes because they're kind of fucking – they're Neanderthals.
Well, here's the thing. Jacob Wohl was banned from a bunch of stuff, and, you know, he was doing he was trying to be like a gay op thing. Like, he was trying to do like a political consulting firm, which was basically just gay ops for money. Yeah. And the only person, I mean, Ghislaine Maxwell hired him because he's dirty enough to take her fucking money.
Right.
But he's a scumbag. And the other thing is, if every Jew was like him, there'd be no problems.
No.
We would have no problems.
Nothing would ever work.
Because everybody, well, also the whole population would be so revolted by them that, right. I mean, of course, when he does his cameo, the first thing he talks about is how to not let your employees unionize. Remember that?
It's fucking sick. Yeah.
And it's just like, dude, shut up. Like, he's obviously, like, and again, there's a certain very rare type of like sociopath, I guess, that finds his personality appealing. But it's like, generally speaking, I think Nietzsche actually said this, not to be a Nietzschean, but he actually said, like, there's no more horrible creature than the young Jew of the stock market or something like this. I can't remember exactly what he said, like, the young Jew of the stock market is one of the most wretched creations. I don't know. And that's exactly the type he was talking about.
Yeah, a lot of goys that would, like, play the stock market on the weekends as, like, a distraction or something. Like, they were shocked when Jews started pouring in.
Yeah.
And, like just every like, gentleman's agreement, like, unwritten rule and stuff was just broken.
Yeah.
You just have, like, these dirty lice-infested Jews with, like, a hole in their shoe, like, walking in, making millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And all the Anglos were like, oh, my God.
Well, at one point, they outlawed Yiddish on the floor of the stock market.
Yeah, because they would fucking talk about
it. Because the other people, we don't know what the hell these people are. They're literally plotting. They're literally plotting.
Yeah, they're plotting, yeah. Now, what do you think of the FBI releasing the Protocols of Zion in full?
Okay.
Well, their Twitter. Did you see that shit?
Okay, so in Human, All Too Human, Nietzsche says, perhaps the youthful Jew of the stock exchange is the most repugnant creature known to man. I mean, he's not wrong. No, I mean, Nietzsche said a lot of good stuff.
To quote Tupac, some things will never change.
Okay, here's the full quote. Altogether, the most disgusting invention of mankind. That is fucking. He's not wrong.
No.
The youthful Jew. There's different translations, but that's the best one.
Think of the image of a hysterical man waving his arms around, sweating, but not giving a fascist speech, doing it at the stock market.
Well, the other thing about that is that there's this thing about those types, and I really think Wohl is like a perfect example of this social type. Is that they revel in their own arrogance and corruption, and they rub it in your face.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that's really bad optics.
Well,
and so,
again, it's fucking stupid.
it's stupid, and it does, like, nobody likes it. So I said, again, if they were all like him, we wouldn't have any problems. That's why he was relegated to the fringes, because he was just, nobody likes him. Dude, it's like, if people understand that you are representing Jews, they'll just hate Jews. So, like, you gotta go, you know?
Oh, the FBI just took, the FBI took down the Protocols of Zion from its page. It got, like, literally, like, 10,000 retweets.
So, what happened with this? Explain, I don't know, I'm so, missed
all. You know how they have the vault? The FBI vault. Okay. Where they released documents. They had one about Ernst Zundel.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
about just how they like watched him and he never committed.
Yeah,
any crimes.
Surveillance and all that. It's just the internal documents that they leaked to the public. Well, yesterday or like 2 days ago, they released their vault on the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. And the thing is, now they deleted it, but what happened was that they had in the document, they had the full Protocols of Zion in it.
Hmm.
And basically what it is apparently in the 1930s and 40s, people were sending the Protocols of Zion to J. Edgar Hoover saying, like, hey, you need to investigate this. I think there's a Jewish conspiracy against America. People were like sending thousands and thousands of letters to the FBI to investigate the Protocols of Zion to see if they're real. Mm-hmm. Really goes to show you also, like, the idea that somehow Americans were Philo-Semites in the 1940s and shit's bullshit. It's fucking bullshit. Even after World War II, they weren't as sympathetic as you might think. But the point is that the FBI released this, and it had the full copy of it in the document.
They just don't want people reading
thousands of it. Got thousands of
reasons. Because when people read it, what they say is, like, where's the lie? Like, the thing is, they won't, like, people all go and say, oh, it's a forgery, it's fabricated, and you know, I don't have an opinion on that one way or the other, but the point is, like, and I don't want to do the thing, oh, it's effectively true. It doesn't matter. Like, it's describing what they do. So,
yeah, but who the fuck released that? Who makes the call to release this?
I mean,
that's what I want to know, because they definitely inspect these things. All of them are carefully redacted to protect sources.
And Jews like just don't want people. They don't want people reading that. Period. Right, like, they just want you to know. I mean,
is this like some people were speculating about whether this is a dog whistle that Trump is organized to put up there? I don't know.
Well, it could be a Finkelthink thing, but again, because Trump has dog whistled anti-Semitism. Which is how I know – this is the other thing. And this is another thing that should be a white pill. We know that Trump has done – like, liberals aren't wrong. This is another thing I always say. They're not – Jews are not – they're crazy, okay? They have personality defects, but they're not wrong when they see anti-Semitism and stuff. Like, I was talking about T.S. Eliot the other day. How T.S. Eliot had, like, some anti-Semitic lines in some of his poems, like only a few, like a couple.
Remember the Jew in the box.
Yeah, and like a Jew wrote like an entire thesis, like analyzing all of his poetry.
Yep. Oy vey goes the Jew.
Yeah, so like they see it, and they see it, and they're not wrong, because they know better than anybody who they are. And
well, they know that, like, if you follow the Da Vinci painting and you decode it, that you're just going to get one answer. Like, if like there's just one answer. Like, they can see like a pattern. Like, they don't always get like someone who's actually critical of Jews, but when they see someone like a journalist or an intellectual or anything like that, mm-hmm. they see them starting to interact with a certain set of issues. And starting to go on certain tracks of mm-hmm. investigation, they know where they're inevitably going to end up.
Well, this is why they started to freak out about QAnon shit, because, you know, Q has only actually gotten bigger. But Q doesn't really talk about Donald Trump and the sealed indictments. They're talking about a pedophile conspiracy.
Right.
Like, those people are going wild with, like, all elites are pedophiles, which is why I think this stuff...
Yeah, they're on the right track.
They're on the right track, but that's why Jews are freaking out. And I guarantee you that they're freaking out about, like, Tom Hanks and Ellen DeGeneres and Justin Bieber and stuff. It's very low IQ, but what it is there's definitely probably even Mossad people or these Israeli internet defense people or whatever. They're just going into their Facebook groups and just planting that stuff for them to go after those people, because they know that they already don't like those people, right? They know they already don't like Ellen DeGeneres and Justin Bieber. So, now we'll implicate them in this whole pedophile thing, and then they'll focus on that, and then they'll never look, you know, further than that. But the fact that there's people that are talking about that, talking about elite pedophiles. I mean, it sounds, it almost, I almost cringe myself when I say it, because it sounds so almost far-fetched, like you wouldn't believe it. But I, look, we have no choice but to believe it, given everything we've learned in the last couple of years.
Right.
That there is, and not necessarily every single one, but there are many people in positions of power that are totally compromised.
And it doesn't need the ridiculous editorializing of Satanism and shit like that. I mean,
No. You don't need to pretend like they're having weird rituals beneath the hawk statue and sacrificing children. Yeah. No,
they might be, but there's no proof of it. No hard proof.
Right. Like, what's happening is Jeffrey Epstein and others like him basically offer young teenage girls to elites, and elites take it.
Right.
They take the offer, and then they're on there on video. Now they're on tape. Now they've got evidence.
There might also be an understanding that you have to do this if you want to get by.
You almost have to compromise yourself like that in order to ascend.
So, Mike, if you're going to run for president, make sure you invite me. I want to be the vice.
No.
We're just fucking.
But but that's no. Fucking I mean, I think that's what it is. It's not even. It's not like they're, you know, chopping up babies and eating them or something. I mean, there could be some people doing things like that, but we don't have the evidence. But we do have the evidence.
I see a lot of QAnons talking about adrenochrome. Now I'm not
the
sure.
Fuck is that? Is that like
they say that like they have like an underground factory where they terrify children and then they kill them. And the fear that's produced by the adrenaline is then extracted from their bodies and elites inject it.
Wasn't that the plot of like Monsters, Inc.?
I don't know. I haven't seen that.
Well, this is the funny thing. That's like David Icke shit. Like David Icke.
Those people, sometimes you have to think if they're fucking in on it. Because the fact that they turned it into something like that. I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible.
Well, he's probably just a lunatic. I mean,
I'm not saying that they don't have pedophile rings that where they abuse.
Oh, they do.
Not just teenage girls. The Epstein thing is the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this because I have actually known people that have talked about things that they have seen, and I believe them. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you right now that, you know, well, if you've ever lived in New York City and you've met people, you know, I've met people at bars, I've met people I'm acquainted with. I'm not friends with, but acquainted with. That have told me shit about their childhood where they've seen stuff and they're afraid that, you know, we can't talk about it and shit. But, like, they claim that, and I believe them because there's no reason for them to lie. Well, maybe for attention. But the point is that they're out there. The problem is the grifters that add stuff that's not true so that they can make money off the conspiracy theory racket.
And also make it something that nobody wants to touch because it's too weird and out there. I mean, there's a whole way that works. But, I mean, we have – and again, Maria Farmer, you know, she said
it is happening. I mean, I don't know if you remember about 20 years ago, there was something in Russia where they would abduct orphans, they would abduct little children, and murder them on camera and sell it to rich sickos in America for $10,000. And the people running it, one of them was based out of Israel.
Yeah, of course. I mean, any shit like that is going to be based out of Israel.
Liam Pierce did a show on this back in early 2000s.
Well, you remember also the Brazilian – the Israel embassy in Brazil.
Yeah.
But they were literally having like 8-year-olds like sex parties there. What's that?
Is that true that they had 8-year-olds?
Dude, they had children as young as 8. This was reported, but only reported in Portuguese.
Oh, I see.
Dawson had a whole thing on it. They were basically they went too far because it was actually the Israel embassy and the two ambassadors that were there. The two Jews that were like acting as like the top diplomats there were like they were like homosexual lovers themselves, so the whole thing was a mess. But like, and they actually got what happened was they just got flown back to Israel. Like the Brazilian authorities were going to arrest them. They were going to like break whatever.
Imagine a country that defends its own pedophiles like that. I mean, well, I don't think there's any.
And they just wanted to hush it up. They wanted to hush it up, and it was hushed up. It was never reported in English. Like, why is it that's a story that should be international news? But no, they managed to hush it up and only made Portuguese newspapers.
I mean, That's another thing about this story in Russia. You'd think a story
it's definitely
about
true, dude. Don't think that I'm not
saying you're making that up at all. I believe it. I'm just it's just that it's hard to believe one that they would be doing that in the embassy.
Well, that was like, I don't think the Jews liked that. I think you know because again, what happened was they actually put two sick homosexual freaks in charge of that embassy.
If you remember America's Most Wanted when they had that guy, he had an Italian name, who said accused. Straight up, directly accused Barney Frank of molesting him.
Oh, I believe that.
And saying, like, yo, I was like a 9 or 10 year old boy, and I saw little kids being molested. And because on the one level,
dude, like, if you look at Barney Frank, you know, it's impossible not to imagine that he's a child molester. Like, it's very difficult to imagine a world where he's not.
Yeah, and by the way, they have these parties in Washington. That's totally true. They don't have it at Comet Pizza, probably.
Oh, at Barney Frank's house.
But they just have them at Barney Frank's house. That's exactly true. And you know what's funny? From what I hear, from what I read, they tried to subpoena Barney Frank's psychiatrist. He had like a psychologist, a psychotherapist of some kind. And they tried to subpoena them to see if there's any allegations are true, and the therapist is like, I can't, you know, I have privileged. These conversations are privileged, even though you're supposed to inform on a crime if there's a crime, right? So a therapist is supposed to, if there's an imminent danger or someone is committing a serious crime, a therapist is actually bound by ethics to report it. So, but anyway, the point is, yes, really rich assholes do really sick shit. And this is nothing new. I mean, it's just how there's something about that tier of people that in liberal societies that like perversion just flourishes. It's because the cosmopolitanism itself is a kind of paraphilia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're a cosmopolitan and you believe in no judgment, no nothing of anything, you're already in a morally relativistic frame. And that's not to say every cosmopolitan is a pedophile, but you're more likely to be experimenting sexually with different things and unlocking things in your brain you were never meant to unlock, and you're constantly chasing a new and new novelty. And I think that pornography is actually this hasn't been proven, I don't think, but pornography, the actual like. The habit that something like 70% of American men have of watching porn every fucking day, that's going to do shit to your brain. We've talked about this a million times, but that's going to do shit to your brain where it's been shown it changes the plasticity of your brain and you're constantly looking for more and more novelty. The last stop on legal porn is like trannies getting shit on and stuff like that. But then what happens when you try and get off the train and hitchhike a little further because they ain't doing it for you anymore? There's got to be people like that, and there are. And that's how you get this explosion in pedophile actives. Remember in the video we showed?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that person? Do you know who that person is?
No, remind me.
So in the 11-minute video that we showed the audience at the rally, at the speech, I found a clip of a person, a transgendered like pronoun warrior who's like a game developer, you know, some of off the charts Asperger's, right? And who's also polyamorous and refers to themselves as we. So it's probably multiple personalities as well. This person is on YouTube, like doing like a confessional saying, I'm attracted to children as young as 5 years old. And saying this openly and talking about how this person uses Twitter, that they used to use Tumblr. Now Tumblr used to be a fucking bug lamp for sexual deviants. I don't know if you remember Tumblr, how it was.
Yeah, I remember how it was.
Then something happened where it was like bought out by another company and they banned porn from it. Because it was just a huge liability. As people were posting child
when
porn.
When they banned it, that was actually the beginning of the end for that. Because that had been just taken over by – I remember Tumblr was like synonymous with just like homosexual SJWs like a few years ago.
Yes. And doesn't it speak volumes that as soon as they ban like They ban porn, and like there's no more kiddie porn or bestiality. Mm-hmm. Or even like animated versions of it, which are technically legal. Once they ban that, like everyone walks. Mm-hmm. No one goes back to the platform ever again. The fact that this is synonymous, Tumblr is synonymous with both pedophiles and leftists, really says a lot about the modern left. But the point is, this pedophile is saying, yeah, I was on Tumblr and I met other maps. And for anyone that's not familiar with this lingo, and it's starting to gain traction, don't fucking be surprised when you start seeing, just like white privilege and stuff like that, you see on the Google charts, the use in the media, it just blows up. Polyamory, white privilege, shit like that, it just blows up, right, all of a sudden. Don't be surprised if you start seeing maps, minor attracted person. If you start seeing that start to blow up, because they have a movement. They have a movement. This is what we talked about in the speech. You talked about this. Pedophiles have an advocacy movement.
Yes, here's the thing. Now, most people, the 77% of people that say my opinions are censored, should pedophile minor. They are allowed to now. It's very few elites are at the point, or so far gone, they will come out and endorse this. However, nobody is saying they shouldn't be allowed to have it. They are not being censored. That's the most amazing thing. Basic white nationalism.
Is
a ban from everything. Yet here are these people that say we are sexually attracted to children. They say this. And they are allowed to have meeting places and like meeting rooms and a community on Twitter and on all these other places. It's just allowed to have it. And they're allowed to discuss it. And the Twitter allows it. They explicitly had to allow it. And
I don't think they had to allow it. Someone made a decision somewhere.
They didn't have to. Why is that a decision that Twitter made?
Like a couple of years ago, like if a pedophile started using the rainbow flag and saying I'm LGBT, pansexual, and a pedophile. Like sometimes like fag, like gay gatekeepers would be like being like, yo, not now, go away. You gotta go. You can't have this because people are gonna get mad. But now you don't see any of that, which is really funny. You don't see the gatekeepers swooping in to say, no, we're the LGBTXP movement, and we want pedophiles to be deplatformed. Because they can get us deplatformed, right? SPLC-ADL. They can get us deplatformed.
Why don't they? Why is it that all of their work goes into that, but not into these groups that openly say that they are interested in sex with children?
Yeah. In fact,
why is it that the Trust and Safety Committee for Twitter, which the ADL and the SP, I don't think the SPLC is on anymore. I think they got excluded, but the ADL is certainly, they're the ones that basically run it. And then they put certain other, like, you know,
they have gay groups on there too.
Yeah. Why did they say, part of trust and safety?
If they were conservatives and it was someone that was being racist or something, they'd be like, yeah, get the racists off. They're making us look bad. But fags aren't doing that. They don't seem to have any concern about open pedophiles' maps, who, by the way, now have their own LGBT flag. They have their own little flag now, just like transgenders do. Maps have their own flag. They gather on Twitter openly. They make like memes with like furry stuff. Like there's like a whole like network of people that are furries, and they're also pedophiles, and they're also transgendered. And these people are apparently – they're compacted on these platforms like Discord and now Twitter, because they're kicked off of Tumblr and they all have reconvened on Twitter. And this open pedophile on YouTube is saying this is like, I lost contact with the map community, but now I'm back with the maps on Discord and Twitter. We've reestablished ourselves as a community, and now we're advocating for, and of course for now what they're doing is like, now don't get it wrong, I don't touch children, don't get it wrong, it's monstrous to do that. I'm just extremely sexually attracted to children and have no other tastes at all. That's how they're gonna start. They're gonna be like, no, we're non-offending pedophiles, okay. They're basically like taking
it's like I don't care.
Well, they have friends in academia. They have Jewish.
I mean, look.
Academia.
Well, they've tried to do this. Allen Ginsberg.
My head. Yes.
You know, they've tried to do this before. There have been before. Like, we've talked about David Cohen Bendit. Yep. We've talked about Allen Ginsberg. We've talked about Wilhelm Reich. Like, these people that have tried to do this before in society always said no. It's too much.
And they deliberately do things.
But they
keep bringing
it back.
And you know what's funny? They're playing – pedophiles are playing – I don't want to get people paranoid, but they are playing 5D chess. Like, you'll see a lot of them will be like, yeah, I think the voting age should be abolished. We should let everyone vote, including children. Oh, no, we should abolish the family. We should give children the right to become independent of their parents at any age they want, yeah, and things like that. I mean, that's 5D chess. That's 5D chess. I mean, it's not always obvious to the normal person what they're doing when they do that. But what they're doing is saying, no, let's abolish the age of consent for
everyone. Pretend like they have agency on the level that adults do so that they can, like, choose to have sex. And then like,
right. Yeah. That's all begging the question.
Yeah.
Get to that one where you get to the point where you abolish the legal voting age. You abolish the rights of parents over their children. And then you're at a point in the political discourse in this fucking
how do you have age of consent if you don't have a voting age?
You get to the point in this country where they're like, oh, wait, why can't adult men have sex with a 13-year-old girl?
Yeah, well, if they have the agency to vote, then they can choose to have sex too, right?
Derp. Yeah, and then you'll get people like Destiny and Vouch. People will show me a study saying that a 13-year-old can't consent to sex. Show me a study, because all these universities that have pedophile billionaires –
they seem to have confirmed that these girls have the ability to offer consent, right? Yeah, no, it's fucking disgusting.
I mean, we can talk about this too. This is actually trending on Twitter. Cuties. You've seen that?
Yes. Actually, Jamie just told me about that this morning. I hadn't seen that. Now, I was also talking about – now, we also had talked about –
straight up, before we start talking about this straight up, let me just name you the person – it's a French film company that releases. Let me just name you the chairman, David Grumbach.
Oh, God. Oh, yes. My God. Well, so, person that promoted this is a black French person, I believe. And it's mostly blacks. I saw the poster. It looked like it was
Senegal.
Most blacks and non-whites. What's that?
It's about Senegal. It's about children in Senegal.
Oh, interesting. So that's what it's about.
No, it's about children from Senegal in Paris.
Okay, and is it celebrating this?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a story about their struggles and turmoil and so on, but it ends up being like, oh, look at these poor children. They end up finding catharsis and they end up relieving their pain and suffering by becoming child strippers. Yes.
Okay. Now the thing is that Netflix actually apologized for that. But who apologized for Big Mouth?
Yeah.
Big Mouth, who is Nick Kroll, who is the scion of the Kroll family, which founded Kroll Intelligence Services, which was like a private Mossad agency. Jazz Hands did a whole deep dive on this a few weeks ago. You got to listen to it. It's unbelievable.
Wait, Nick Kroll, the little wormy comedian?
Yes. He is the son of the Kroll. I forget his name. I think Jules Kroll, who founded Kroll Incorporated. They've had a couple of different companies because they've had to fold because there was like Kroll and then K2. They're like intelligence agencies.
Oh my
yes,
God.
He is deep. That Nick Kroll is heavily – he is related to people that are deeply involved in Mossad and gay ops, well, Jewish
all,
international.
That's all Ghislaine Maxwell has to do. Just wait for your fellow tribesmen to make it okay.
Just make everything okay. I mean, and look, yeah. I think actually –
just wait for Neil Gorsuch to vote that. It's
Big Mouth is probably – Big Mouth is probably worse than Cuties. Like, I'm sure the Cuties is bad, but Big Mouth is like openly about young children masturbating and stuff like that.
Give us the movie by Seth Rogen called Good Boys.
I remember when it came out. I remember. I know exactly.
Yeah, it's like a comedy movie about literal fifth graders.
Finding dildos and shit.
They're playing with dildos and shit gross. Like that. And they're getting sexual and with other little girls. And it's just
– it's filthy. And Seth Rogen – because he got an R rating or he got some like not appropriate. He got it's starring children, and the rating was not appropriate for children. So Seth Rogen then went out and he advertised the movie based on that, where he took the kids that were stars in it and he did an ad with them where he said, you know, you guys were all allowed to be in this movie, but you're not allowed to watch it. Isn't that funny? Isn't that crazy? What a dumb system we have. And it's like,
it actually, he's right.
Why were you? I'm like, yeah, you're right, but from the wrong way. Why are you allowed to make that movie then? If children can't watch the movie you're making, why you shouldn't be allowed to make it?
Why is it legal to?
Why are you making that? Why are you allowed to show 8-year-olds playing with dildos in your fucking movie, asshole? Why do you want to do that?
I'm not sure what the history is of the rating system. I think it's like
Probably some attempt by Gentiles to rein in.
Yes. No, what it is that it's like it's like almost like an antiquated version of the Catholics that used to kind of have some sort of control over how movies were made. They used to ban nudity and ban obscenity and things like that in movies. And Jews were really mad about that. And they somehow were able to outmaneuver them. And break that down.
What they did was they made the rating system into like an advertisement for the movie. Like, oh, this movie's rated this, you know?
But yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I remember. I mean, it's like you have to strike a balance, because if you get it at NC-17, then no one goes to see it, because that's like a stigma. But if you there's a whole movement of Jews in the 90s and 2000s. Where they tried to get it as close as possible to NC-17, but just short of it.
Do they even attach ratings to movies anymore? I mean, I remember
they do.
They do, but nobody pays any attention. They used to say it at the end of ads, but they don't anymore. They just advertise.
They used to. I remember even as a kid, if you want to get into an R-rated movie,
it was like a thing. Yeah,
it was like a thing. They wouldn't let you in many cases. Like if you were a kid. And you were unaccompanied, so like you know, I'm pretty sure that's done with.
Yeah, I don't think they even bother anymore. Like, it's just, it's all fake.
But you see how they chisel away at these pillars of moral well-being.
Yeah, attempts to reimpose or to just, like, do some kind of rearguard action to defend basic morality, like, are just always run down and tired out and made irrelevant.
It's one thing to be silly and pretend that like teenagers, like, you know, high school age teenagers are having sex or drinking or whatever. It's one thing to be, it's kind of immature to assume that's not happening, because it is. Mm-hmm. But what they're doing is they're chiseling away at that limit by saying, no, now we're going to have like sixth graders, you know, and South Park kind of pioneered this of using children as the puppets for obscenity, right?
Oh yeah, by making them in cartoon form, say all these adult things.
Yeah, it starts with the cartoons, and then it fucking ends with the real life movies, and then it ends up with the real life society like that.
Yeah, it just ends. You know? With,
and
like,
I think a lot of little kids, this dovetails with a lot of little kids that age are watching porn now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, dude.
They're
watching porn. There's no real way to stop it unless you just, you know, if you give your kid this is like it starts also with like the TikTok shit and all of these apps and stuff that they're, you know, and of course all these other kids are on it because parents aren't really watching that close, and every kid needs to have their phone because the other kids have it. And then, like, you know, all of these ways that the Jewish consumer impulse then affects how you're supposed to raise your kids, and then you have to put into their hands the tools that Jews will use to corrupt them.
Why?
It's really fucked up. So I wanted to just real quick on that Israeli embassy story. What happened was in 2016, a guy by the name of Ari Scher was nominated to be the Israeli consul to Australia.
Right.
But they shut it down, and they had to shut it down because of his history. So this guy, Amir Lati, was the consul to Australia, and he was actually engaging in espionage and got caught. So he was being expelled. So of course, you know, which is sort of funny, right? But it's like expelled for what? Like, do you think the Israeli state wasn't just totally behind him? Of course they were. So then they nominated, almost as like a fuck you to Australia. For expelling this guy, they're like, here, now you get Ari Scher. Now, Ari Scher had fled Brazil because he was basically implicated in a child sex ring. Now, he was having a homosexual relationship with a guy named George Steinberg, who ran a Hebrew school for kids in Brazil. And I was wrong. They didn't do the parties at the Israeli embassy, but it was at Cher's penthouse apartment in Rio. They had the Brazilian police caught them with everything. They have the pornographic pictures of young kids taken at Ari Scher's penthouse apartment. They had every fucking thing. So what happened is, though, the way the Jewish news presented this, because they did talk about it somewhat, was he had managed to flee before he could be arrested, and there was just like nothing anyone could do. I'm like, well, you could arrest him.
Right,
he's in Israel. You could arrest him. Oh, yes. and then they're like, he laid low for a while, and he got married, and then he was like put back into the diplomatic service for Israel, and they had Jews coming out saying like, oh, he made some mistakes, but that doesn't have to injure his whole career for his whole life. It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
I mean,
and so then after the Australians say this guy has to go, we caught him red-handed spying. Jews like, okay, we'll take him back. Oh, here's this guy who was 10 years ago or so, literally caught red-handed running a pedophile ring and creating child pornography in his penthouse apartment in Brazil. Here's your new diplomat.
Yeah, I mean, think it's of like, it from your own perspective. Like, if you had. If you had the power to like have say over who would be a diplomat or not, and you had a story like that on your table, what would you do to this person? You'd probably put him up on capital charges in your own country. I mean, it's just,
well, if somebody accused of that,
yeah,
that was from my country. Say I had power, state power. Someone accused of that in another country where the police in that country had the evidence and brought it to me, I would arrest them and execute them.
Yes, exactly.
In my country.
Yeah,
I'll be like, you're sorry.
I mean, I'm assuming his victims were non-Jewish. Or
yeah, what? Yeah, they were like these little brown Brazilian kids.
Yeah,
like, that's there's one picture they have in this article that's not it's of kids, but they're not doing any of the terrible stuff yet. And apparently, they got some of them at a Christian food bank, is where they would go to pray and find these children. Yeah,
I mean, I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, it's just more and more of this.
It's just like it's just unbelievable. But of course, this is not really reported very widely. I mean, you have to actually rely on some of this for some elements of the Jewish media.
There was actually, back to the original case about the Russian Jew pedophile ring that was raping and killing 5-year-old children on camera and selling it to wealthy perverts. This was a conclusive, and Snopes was saying, oh, there's no such thing as snuff movies and this or that. Shit's like something out of a nightmare. But anyway,
so here's actually
didn't report on it. And you know what's funny? An Italian newsman, because this happened, they arrested these guys in Italy. Italian police arrest. See, you can't bribe. This is the thing about meds. You can bribe meds out of a parking ticket or even to do you some political favors. You can't bribe
on that kind of stuff.
You can't bribe meds on that kind of shit because every med loves his family. And when they see shit like that, they get
disgusted. They're disgusted.
And a fucking an Italian news anchor actually got one of the videos of one of the rapes and murders from one of the police officers who was told not to leak it, and he leaked it anyway to them just to show that it was true. And they showed clips of it, not the actual like violence or rape, but they showed clips of it to show that it was true. And the Italian news anchor was fired for it. Even though he's just doing what journalists are supposed to do.
Yeah, in theory, that's like exactly what journalists are actually supposed to do. Yeah,
and there's a whole big cover-up. Nothing was ever heard of any of these guys ever again. They're extradited to Russia. Nothing ever heard from them about them or from them ever again. There's some beliefs that they may have run off to Israel. They may have gotten some bribes to leave or whatever. Who knows? They might have blackmailed people.
Here's an article. I just want to read the English translation from this article. From a website called JC Online, after learning of the existence of the photographs, Israel's consul general to Brazil rushed to the police station to view them. In a story titled "Consul of Israel Criticizes Police and Press,"
right?
They write, "Yesterday, police headquarters in Copacabana, the consul general of Israel, Itan Circus, saw for the first time the photographs apprehended as evidence in the case against Israeli Vice Consul Ari Scher and Hebrew language professor George Steinberg. In some photos, the two appear naked hugging, and others they are surrounded by naked minors. Circus met with commission agent Icaro Silva, who is agent in charge of the investigation. Upon leaving police headquarters, the consul general refused to comment on the photos. Instead, he criticized police for not sending a copy of the charges to the consulate, nor the Department of State of Israel. We have not received notification of the charges from Brazilian authorities regarding this case, said Circus. Detective Silva replied that he had no obligation to provide such information. They did not ask for any information, he added. The consul general also criticized the Brazilian press for divulging what he called incorrect information. A search of Scher's apartment confirmed that photographs found at Steinberg's residence had been taken in the vice consul's luxury penthouse. We confirmed that the pornographic pictures were taken next to the consul's pool and on his deck, said Roberto Costa, a chief investigator for the civil police. We are going to charge him with exploiting minors and prostituting them.
Yeah.
After Brazilian authorities notified the Israeli embassy of plans to revoke Scher's diplomatic immunity, he fled. So there, though, it's all true. I mean, the one thing I was wrong. It did not happen in the embassy itself, but it happened in the ambassador's or the vice consul, the second in command to the ambassador to Brazil, in his apartment. And the freaking top guy, when he finds out about it, he's like, "Well, you should have told us first, and you shouldn't have told the press. And the press is putting incorrect information. What's the incorrect information? Why don't you be specific? What specifically is incorrect? What specifically has been incorrect?
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is, again, it's just in general, the fact that you said the media didn't cover it widely, it's true. The same is
not, no English language media cover, and this is on National Vanguard. They're the only ones that covered it.
Right? Yeah, there you go. There you go. So the point is, though, is that we, you know, when you live in a society, it's engineered to make it so that making a mild racial criticism is more of a basically de facto crime than being a child molester.
Mm-hmm.
That's a society that's been flipped on its head morally and is thus illegitimate. So you have to have a response to that, a political response. And that's what we have. You know, what does the common man, you know, not even just whites, any race, you know, what does an average person on the street of any kind, any religion, whatever, think of this?
Right.
Okay. What do they think of this?
Detective Silva and Roberto Da Costa wanted to freaking put this guy away.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
And then they ran up against, I mean, you know, who knows what roadblocks they ran up against. Well, obviously the guy fled. It's only government
run by Jews too, so.
Yeah, so it's like eventually they're going to hit, a point. But I think it's also like, if this gets out in Brazil, the government's not going to have any choice but to pretend at least to be doing something.
Right.
So it's almost like convenient for everybody that the guy flees. But then, you know, he turns up in Israel. Of course, Israel has no extradition treaty with anybody. And not only that, they try and put him in the embassy in Australia in 2016. Literally as a fuck you to Australia. It had to have been. There's no other how could you do that? Imagine even trying to rehabilitate the guy. That's when you know. That's like arrogance. That's like actually. But apparently, you know, they can trust the English language media, which is totally 100% controlled by Jews.
Yep.
To just not tell anybody these things. Not tell anyone. You have to only, you know where you find this stuff out?
Yeah, that's what they do.
You find this stuff out from Jewish news agencies and the, there are Jews that want to issue a mild rebuke of this, not for what it is, but because it got out.
It's bad optics, right?
Yeah.
It's basically damage control. I mean, that's the thing. You know, when Jews are guilty of something, they have media that does damage control for them. And we see this even with Alan Dershowitz. Yeah. Like, you know, why is Patrick Henry of Fox News was accused frivolously of rape in a civil lawsuit, and he was immediately fired. But then Alan Dershowitz goes on Fox News all he wants, and he's actually been credibly accused by multiple witnesses of being a child molester. I mean.
Right.
You know, well, I mean, give me a break. Why is he not canceled?
Let's be honest. It's extremely credible that Alan Dershowitz has had sex with multiple underage girls that he obtained through the Epstein network.
Right. So why is he given a platform on Newsmax?
Why does he get to defend himself?
To do an op-ed accusing his accusers of being anti-Semites.
Right, as if. Well, here's the thing. If you were raped by Jews, maybe there's a reason for that. Like, the thing is, when Maria Farmer gives her story, and we played some of the audio from her, from the YouTube video that he's referencing in that article, we played some of the audio on Tedious. And she even says she actually struggled with it because anti-Semitism is such a taboo, but every Jewish person that she met was a sexual predator.
Right.
And they were all abusers, and they abused her, and they abused her racially. She actually outlines there was things that, that Dershowitz left out. She outlines that Epstein and Maxwell and the Jews that surrounded them racially abused white people and considered white people to be – like openly considered white people to be lower than them and talked about it openly, how they don't deserve anything. And they use the word white too.
Yes.
And so she was saying all of this stuff. And, you know, in a way, the girl, I will give Whitney Webb, who was hosting that, a lot of credit because she was really uncomfortable with that type of material at first. She seems to have gotten over that and is now willing to just report whatever.
Yeah.
So I'll give Whitney Webb a lot of credit for,
she's
getting over.
She's a spectacular journalist.
Yeah. She was getting over, because you could tell in that very video with Maria Farmer, she's not comfortable with that type of material. With openly talking about Jews and power and whites being oppressed, and she's like iffy on it, but she seems to have gotten over it, and now she's really doing excellent work. So I'll give her a lot of credit, and she's doing work that is reaching a different audience than we typically reach.
Right, and that's always a positive,
which is good. And what I would say to her audience is, like, you know, everything you always heard about people like us is not true. You know, we're not devils, we're not monsters, we're not genocidal maniacs. You and we share a common thing, at least in our moral outrage and wanting to do something over this issue.
Right.
At least we can build a common interest over that. Start.
I see Whitney Webb interacts a lot with things like Mint Press and things like that. We're pretty good.
They're
I think she writes for Mint Press.
Yeah.
Mint Press is kind of like leftist. Mm-hmm. But they're kind of old school left.
Yes.
Like old school anti-war, suspicious of the government, suspicious of Zionism left. Yeah. They're not like – there's no like not a lot of Black Lives Matter garbage on here. Maybe they'll do something like, okay, Israel trains the NYPD or something. But
well, that's they true. Don't
– which is true.
That's true.
They actually – Whitney Webb wrote an article in March 2018 about The Intercept, which I have leftist friends that I talk to about this. And I don't know. Do you know what The Intercept is?
Yeah.
Okay. So The Intercept was founded by funded by this guy Pierre O something, and he's like some kind of Arab billionaire. He's an Arab businessman, and it was started specifically to release the Snowden leaks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of chit chat among leftists I know that would be in the know that tell me that The Intercept is likely a state-run or government intelligence-run intelligence influence operation. Mm. As they said, everyone that leaks to The Intercept gets burned. Every single whistleblower gets burned. And it's almost like they're there specifically to collect the Julian Assange, Snowden.
If you think about it, why wouldn't the government do that, right?
I can't remember if it was Snowden or Julian Assange. It was one of those two that they got their start, The Intercept, as the people
probably
that got
was Snowden because Assange has been around longer.
Yes, yes.
But so, if you think about it, I mean, that only literally makes sense for an intelligence agency to do that. Like, why wouldn't you create a honeypot like that?
It's literally called The Intercept.
I mean, it's almost like, yeah, it's like, dude, what are you intercepting, right?
It's pretty funny, but it's true, yeah. So anyway, they keep burning their whistleblowers. But, you know, it's just these are kinds of things you have to deal with in a so-called democracy, right? Mm. You got to deal with shit like this. This is your free press for you. Julian Assange is in prison and now, of course.
Right. And so, the press won't advocate for him. The press won't advocate for him.
They used to.
They used to, begrudgingly. But they won't anymore.
Now they won't. And that's amazing. That's amazing because Julian Assange was always a champion of the left.
And they got what happened was they got the cultural – the influential cultural sort of middle class urbanite milieu, the kinds of people that read The Intercept, frankly. They got those people against Julian Assange by associating with Trump.
Right.
By basically saying he was a Trumpster. It's not true. I mean, it's really stupid to say that. Here's the thing is I release dirt on powerful people. I don't care who they are. And so this was – and they were like, well, why are you releasing dirt on Hillary Clinton when she needs to defeat this –
when she needs to defeat
the orange Nazi? Like, what are you doing? Like, and so basically because of that then. Right. That was their, you know, that
because he's principal journalist, right?
Right, and that group of middle class kind of professional people that affiliated with a lot of them are white, affiliated with the Democrats. They do have some influence and they have some money, and so they had to be their preference for, like, they liked Julian Assange when he's releasing Iraq War diaries and all that stuff, right? Or yeah. Iraq War leaks or whatever it was. Iraq War diaries was Elle Reeves' gay op where she got her ex-husband put in freaking jail for she induced him to lie about a torture scandal.
Oh man!
In order so that she could advance her career, and he goes to jail. They're divorced, and now she's marrying
a sociopath.
Jew.
Yeah,
yeah. So she's a lunatic sociopath. Yeah, she's a yeah.
So what do you think of the Steve Bannon indictment? Give me your thoughts before I comment.
Well, here's the thing: they did defraud. That whole thing was a fucking fraud. Like, that's the thing. Like, again, this is obviously time that, but if they knew it was a fraud now, why didn't they know it was a fraud? Like, why did they let it go on for so long? This is obviously an election stunt timed right now to hit the Trump movement and hit Trump. But it's also like, dude, but that was a fucking fraud. Like, that build the wall fund was such a fraud.
What's so horrible about America, American law and legal system is that there are a lot of things that everyone is doing that you're just like, okay, maybe I can do this too. But then the law is only applied selectively to you. So even though maybe Bannon might be guilty of these things, mm-hmm. it's alleged, but even though he might be scamming people, at the same time, the law is being selectively applied to him because everyone in Washington is doing this. Mm-hmm. So the law is being selectively applied to him to make a statement by – the intelligence services, they're going after him to potentially there might be some faction in the government that doesn't want Trump elected. And they're going after basically the mastermind of his 2016 campaign, the mastermind of that Finkelfink. So, you know, this is kind of an interesting thing, but like, of course, the person indicting him is a Jew, Audrey Strauss of Manhattan. And it's kind of one thing that's kind of interesting about the last 3 years is just how nakedly political the U.S. attorney in New York is, the SDNY.
Yeah.
It's kind of shocking how openly political. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but they're suing – the district attorney in New York is suing the NRA, and they're basically suing them to destroy them. Mm-hmm. And again, people were correcting me like, no, man, the NRA does do some self-dealing and they do dirty stuff here and there. I'm like, yes. But so do all nonprofits, so do all NGOs. I mean, what do you think? Why do you think the SPLC has like $200 million in the Cayman Islands, right? Since they're doing dirty shit.
Oh, dude. And the other thing is the way these things are structured, the way the law around this, it's actually deliberately confusing and weird. And there's all these little tripwires around, particularly when it comes to nonprofits. Like, on some level, like just a straight ahead business where you're like, I'm just here to make money. Like if you report your income and pay taxes, it's like, it's fairly. Now there's a lot of shit you can get involved with, but with nonprofits, dude, it's so complicated. And so, yeah, everybody does this though. That's the thing. Like you could go and look, you can open up the books. What do you think the ADL's books look like?
Oh man.
Right.
Well, the ADL was literally founded by the mafia. By Mo Dallas. He provided his – he had criminal money. he gave the ADL like millions of dollars in like blood money and like laundered money. Like so the ADL was a criminal organization from its very inception. So I just can't imagine what they would be – what kind of money they're taking now from foreign governments. I wonder what foreign government they might be taking money from. And they're probably really careful about it because they know that's going to be everyone's first suspicion. But it's happening. It's happening through shell companies, through fronts, through this and that. So again, this is why American tyranny is so deviant, is that in practice, it's not even that different from Germany or France where they have strict hate speech laws. But in Germany and France, you know what the laws are in terms of what you can and cannot say, what political views you can and cannot have. And so you just act accordingly and you act around them. And it actually, by having the laws on the books, you can actually work around them more.
That's why they don't want to tell. And the thing is,
in America, you have the wrong beliefs, and you get put on the microscope. You get, oh wait, look at this, uh, this this inappropriate financial dealing.
Yes,
here.
Yes, and it also what it does is it's also a way of humiliating you publicly. So if they don't like you,
I say they deny you the dignity.
They deny you the dignity of actually a political trial because that gives you credibility.
Exactly,
because you're being put on trial for your political beliefs. That makes people be interested in your political beliefs, and you look like a hero. They look like scumbags. They look like tyrants. But instead, they get you on wire fraud. And then they trot you out, and they like, and then they're like, "Oh, not only, oh, look at this, this guy with these unapproved of political opinions. Oh, look, look at him. He's just a common criminal. He's just a common criminal.
He's just a grifter stealing from you.
Yep.
Oh, you're this idealist. You thought you're supporting a good cause, that you were supporting advancement of something you believe in. Mm-hmm. Oh, but this guy, he's just stealing from you. He's just a thief. He's a grifter." Look at that. Doesn't that demoralize you? Doesn't that disenchant you?
Yeah, you probably couldn't ever trust anybody that promoting these kinds of beliefs.
Yeah.
Probably everybody that talks about this is a grifter and is a liar, and there's no one honest, and you're just going to always be a victim of these people. So you should probably just become an irony bro. That's what the system is telling you.
So this is from the New York Times, which actually, when it comes to stuff like this, they actually, and it's straight reporting, they actually do a good job at summarizing the facts. So it says here, it remained unclear precisely what the year-long investigation into the scheme began, when. But last year, a bank informed Mr. Bannon that federal prosecutors had subpoenaed records related to We Build the Wall, according to a person briefed on the matter. Prosecutors said that despite the effort's early success, there were questions about almost instantly about Mr. Colfag's background. That was apparently one of the big donors.
No, I think the guy that started it. There was a guy that started on GoFundMe, and they let it go.
The viability of his promises to give the money it raised to the government to actually build Mr. Trump's wall. Because of these concerns, prosecutors said GoFundMe warned Mr. Colfag that if he did not find a, quote, legitimate nonprofit organization to handle the money, it would return to the donors. They would return it to the donors. Mr. Colfag claimed that the group had determined that only 800,000 of the funds needed to be given back. Quote, no rules were broken, Mr. Colfag, he said in an interview last year. Quote, 94% of the donors we have been able to reach are opting in. We've reached 75% of all the donors so far. Again, this is devious because, you know, you could say it's a scam off the bat or whatever because we know Bannon and so on. But to be honest, it sounds like an honest mistake that they're making here. I could be wrong, but anyway. But some donors wondered what had happened to their money, and yeah, that's true.
My husband had three children
outside this marriage. Fox starts freaking playing ads when I try and open up an article to read it about this, but go ahead, sorry.
But some donors wondered what had happened to their money. Harvey Garlett of Hattiesburg, Mississippi, donated 60 of the fund and was among those who complained when he received a refund, minus the $3 he had added as a tip to the group. In a complaint to the Florida Secretary of State filed last year, Mr. Garlett wrote that he felt he had been cheated by We Build the Wall, noting that even though Mr. Colfag lived in Florida, he could find no record of a Florida charity registration. So this does sound like kind of a gay op, bro. I'm sorry.
Dude, I remember when this was going on. I get what you're saying, but I felt like this was a fraud operation from the beginning, dude.
Well, it seemed like a shitty campaign stunt, and they would just hold the money in limbo and just
happened. This happened. This started happening when Trump was having trouble when he was doing the fake shutdown, and when he was having trouble. He kept lowering his demand from 25 to 5 billion and Congress like literally wouldn't pass his budget.
Right.
And he shut it down. Well, this whole thing was playing out and people were like kind of bought in on that whole fake and gay theater that they were doing. This then popped up and this guy Colfag, nice name, Colfage, no one ever heard of him before. He just started a GoFundMe to build the wall. It was literally like, you know, I don't know if it was intended to be fraudulent or gay out from the start or whatever, but it raised like $25 million in a couple of days. And GoFundMe kept it up. People were saying GoFundMe should take it down because these guys don't have any ability to do this. And then it's like now this guy has $25 million and it's like, what do you do? And right. apparently, you know, it could be honest, but I remember saying, like, I don't trust this. Like, I right. just don't trust it. But the other thing is, though, it showed a remarkable desire on behalf of people to build a wall. Because people were, and this was, these were not getting big donations. Like, the biggest no. donations they were getting were like $1,000. But they raised $25 million. Most people's donations, if you went and looked at that GoFundMe, it's like $50, $100,
small donations.
$10. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah,
and it, so like it, lots it of people.
Like, it looks donate. Like a typical. It looks like a typical Bannon kind yeah. of man of the people stunt.
Yeah,
it's like, well, this is what the people want, and this is and the Congress isn't doing what Trump is doing for the people. It's kind of like it seems like a campaign stunt that they just didn't legally like think about hard enough. But anyway,
well, if you collect $25 million and you don't have. You don't have a legal end. I mean, in America, particularly.
To be fair, though, that fucking Minnesota Freedom Fund or whatever, mm-hmm. that collected like a similar amount of money, they don't get put under the screen.
Oh no! They had a
and,
whole.
And
yeah,
they're not
dude.
Diddly yeah, shit yeah, with that yeah, money. Dude, they yeah. bailed out a couple of criminals, and what else are you doing with that money? And yeah. some black guy was like, "Yo, nigga, yo, they talk about George Floyd, but they all white." And what he means by white is, you know what?
Oh yeah, that meant yeah. We never talked. Now those people were all Jews. Right. And they claim to be collecting money to bail out people arrested in the protest, but they only bailed out like a couple people
they,
and just like kept the rest.
Bail some people out and stuff. But the point is that like you know,
but
this,
dude,
that's
then they literally like removed their website from the internet and all their pictures and shit. They just ran away.
Yeah, they basically took in tens of millions of dollars. There's no accountability. You know, something similar happened. Remember when they collected millions of dollars after Charlottesville? The leftists did.
Nobody even knows where that went.
The fuck did that money go?
Who was collecting it?
Who was collecting it? Where did it go? It was supposed to go to the hospital bills of the people that claimed they were hit by the car or whatever. How was it distributed? None of these questions were ever answered. They just stole it probably. I don't want to make that allegation.
Okay, so when it comes to the Minnesota Freedom Fund, not only did they not get investigated, but like the like prosecutors defended them, like actual like some yeah. local news affiliates and even local politicians, looked into that right. or like attempted to look into it, and you know the prosecutors were just like nah,
right
nah. So I got a Fox story here. It says lawmaker questions, attorney defends. Minnesota Freedom Funds cash bail practices after Fox 9 investigation. So yes, so they have no intention of like the government, like the legal apparatus of the state has no intention of looking at these people, even though like there's like, apparently one congressperson who and one local asked Fox affiliate that are like even asking questions about it. Yeah,
right. Right. We're like that's typically a violation. But anyway, let me continue reading here. So Colfag enlisted Chris Kobach. Look who else is being roped into this. Chris Kobach, the former Kansas Secretary of State, to serve on the board.
Mm-hmm.
This is talking about We Build the Wall, Inc., which they incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Kobach, a longtime Trump supporter and a prominent immigration hardliner, was not named in the indictment. It says here, Mr. Colfag was brought in by Bannon, who had joined Mr. Trump's campaign's chief executive officer in August 2016 and became the White House chief strategist after Trump was elected. Prosecutors said Mr. Bannon was by then already working with Mr. Badalato on a separate project. A nonprofit group dedicated to promoting, quote, economic nationalism and American sovereignty. Within days of becoming involved with the wall building effort, the two men took, quote, significant control of its day-to-day activities, prosecutors said, including its finances, messaging, donor outreach, and general operations. In January 2019, prosecutors said, the group announced that it was changing its mission. It would seek to build a wall privately. The group donors that they would have to opt in to the altered plan, prosecutors said. Again, they seem to be trying to do things right. Mm-hmm. Several times, prosecutors said Mr. Colfag falsely assured his donors that every dime they gave him would go to the wall. Quote, it's not possible to steal the money, he said at one point. We have an advisory committee. I can't touch that money. It's not for me. But prosecutors contended that Mr. Bannon and Mr. Badalato started making secret payments to Colfag in February 2019 through Mr. Bannon's nonprofit group. Some of the payments, prosecutors said, were made to Mr. Colfag's wife and were disguised on tax forms as media expenses. So again, shady stuff here. I'm not just talking about them. Mm-hmm. Sure, I'm sure they were doing some stuff like that. But
well, you could honestly possibly characterize this as like a guy that got in over his head, because what it is they collected all this money. They had no idea what to do. This guy had no idea what to do with it.
Right.
So GoFundMe is like, you have to have a legitimate company for this to go to, or we're just returning all of it.
Right.
So they found We Build the Wall Inc. And then they realized like, oh, we can't, like, it's not tenable to give it to the government. Initially said, we're just going to give it all to the government and they can put it into a wall fund. That wasn't tenable because if you give money to the government, they have no obligation to do anything. You can't earmark it, right? You can't say, we'll give it to you, but you have to use it for this. You just give it to them. Now, they'll take your money, but they'll use it for whatever they want. So like, okay, we're not going to do that. We're going to found a private company to build a wall. But that wasn't what they said in the GoFundMe statement. So they had to get affirmative permission, and GoFundMe had to see it to change their mission. Right. And then they have a nonprofit, and they also said now – again, it's a lot of it could be racked up to them being stupid about their public statements.
I think what this is,
because they said 100% of it is going to go to construction, none of it goes to us. And then, as it turns out, they were paying a salary to Colfag and whatever.
Here's my take on this. I think, you know, it's pretty obvious Bannon, for all the shittiness he does in public, Bannon is the guy that tells Trump lean in on white and private.
Yeah.
When it's election season, lean in on white. Mm-hmm. Lean in on white. And now that election season is kicking off, I bet they know that Bannon is giving Trump advice to lean in on white, which he's doing right now. And it's paying off in dividends for Trump.
And they want to just,
frankly,
take him
Jews,
out. Yeah.
Jews don't want that to be part of the election. It's not that they have anything against Trump personally. It's just that they don't want that to be. They don't want that discourse, frankly, in the public arena.
No, yeah. That's just something that they have an internal fight about. Like, the Jews that want to do that, it's a minority of them, and they get shit from other Jews, but they also get wild success with conservatives for doing it. So it's like, you know.
What is the shit with political prosecutors? I mean, the prosecutor is clearly motivated by –
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no question. He's racially motivated. He's racially motivated.
Yes.
Like, that Jew is, like, racially motivated to take down Bannon. He sees him as a racial enemy.
Audrey Strauss. And it's also something for the Democrats to cheer, you know, something like that.
Oh, yeah. They love to promote
There's a good chance that the charges get dropped or bled down after
there's like a cottage industry on that section of the left of, like, finding these random public officials and making them into heroes for, rebuking Trump or something like that. Like, it's just annoying. It's really irritating.
Remember Comey?
Oh, God. Like, trying to make Comey into hero is just absurd. The guy's obviously a fucking weirdo, like, in a lot of ways. Like,
but think of it from his perspective. You get all these upcomings, right? I mean, this is kind of also an aspect of the social media that is problematic, is that you get losers. Losers can do certain corrupt and evil things and become super famous, which is what happens with Comey, which happens with all these officials. Mitt Romney, even. Like, remember, even George W. Bush, you know, cat ladies talking about George W. Bush as some kind of conscience of America. Like, it's just insane. But the point is, though, is that this is clearly, like, these prosecutors are politically motivated and they keep doing this shit. I mean, I'm surprised that, you know, Trump, even, you know, these are his personal friends. He's allowing this to continue happening. Like, why is the Department of Justice allowing this to happen? I guess they're in on it.
You know? Yeah, but, I mean, it's like, and the thing is, if Trump, he has intervened, like, he pardoned Roger Stone, right?
Yes.
So when he does that, then they blow up about government corruption. I mean, it's quite remarkable, right? The smallest little thing.
And Trump has people in his inner circle going, oh, no, don't pardon them. Don't pardon them because the libs are going to get mad. You're gonna get bad press and things like that. But the point is, like, his audience gets disappointed when they see this, you know? And in the case of Bannon, like, you know, again, a lot of this stuff seems like a real small time, if true, small time stuff.
Yeah, it's basically like if the allegation is true, what happened is that they basically use a nonprofit and they funnel money into their own bank accounts from
right.
It's basic embezzlement shit, right?
Right.
It's not a, like, dude, every fucking thing in the world is going on like this.
Yes.
And like, again, you know, they actually raise.
And you know what's funny? These guys are probably seasoned professionals like Badalato. Badalato probably has done this a million times before. They brought him in as a as an advisor. And he's like, yeah,
he's like, here's how you do this.
You take the fucking money, you start a nonprofit, you put it in a manila envelope. You fucking give it to your wife.
Well, here's what it is. There are probably people that do this. They just do this, yeah. And they're like, okay, look, it's not a big deal. You got a nonprofit. You can dip into it on the side. You do it like this, right. And this. Because they say they had like encrypted messages in which they detailed how to do some like phony invoices and stuff. And basically, you know, Colfag got like $200,000 out of the $25 million. And of course, Colfag was an idiot. I think he was legitimately like a noob and he just did this on a whim. And I don't know his whole history, but it seems to me.
Well, he called. It's a guy named Andrew Badalato. And I guarantee this guy is some kind of financial advisor.
Some kind of fucking guy that does this.
Yes, shit. I know what you're going to say.
No, I'm not going to say it.
It's very hurtful. Don't say it. Don't say it.
No, he probably does. He's a fixer. He does this shit. He's like, here's how we do it. He's like the wolf.
Yeah.
From, well, but not quite as slick as that.
It says here, here we go. Badalato lives in Florida and is a venture capitalist and entrepreneur who has filed for bankruptcy twice.
Right.
So he's just like, listen, man, this is how I play the game. This is how you play it.
Yeah, he's like, yeah.
Doing this lever. And Kofag was probably, man, well, isn't that a little iffy legally? He's like, don't worry about it. They never look into it.
He's like, look, it doesn't matter. Everybody does it, you know?
If you're in a political. Like if you're just a criminal, like if you're just like a goomba criminal, like a guy who just like funnels money and plays with money.
Yeah, if he raised money for like the fund to help stray cats, like nobody would have ever given a fuck.
No one, he would totally get away with it.
Get away with all of it, yeah.
But the thing is, when you're doing political stuff, this is a country that persecutes political crimes. This country does it anyway, and I find that too many right wingers don't get it.
They think they the law.
Can't wrap their minds about it. That's why, like me and Mike and everyone we know, fucking buy the book. In fact, you will never find more law-abiding people.
Oh no, and that pisses them off so much.
Alt-rights or white nationalists. You will never find more law-abiding people.
Which is funny because given their desire. To get us, the fact that they have to resort to like getting a guy for putting a sticker on a telephone pole, which is not even a crime.
It's not.
Like, it's not a crime. And it doesn't even if you have a vandalism statute, if you're not arresting everybody that puts up stickers, it's not a crime. You're getting yourself, and there's so many precedents on that. So yeah, that's fact that, and then they make a big deal like they caught the fucking leader of Hezbollah.
Yes.
Like they do. Like that guy down in Virginia Beach, they fucking surround his house with cops for his sticker. It's like 1-inch square. It says the right stuff.biz. They surrounded this guy.
That's the level they're on. It's not funny because it's actually.
I mean, it's funny, but it's like darkly funny, but it's also scary as fuck.
It's fucking scary, iron fist oppression, you know? The point is, though, is that if you bring in a normie, whether it's a lawyer, an accountant, people don't
understand this yet.
They're used to doing things a certain way, and they don't calculate the political.
He's just operating a normal level of corruption in the system. Like here's like the base level of corruption you're allowed to operate with, and we just do it every day.
Okay, Michael Cohen has been Donald Trump's fixer for what, 20 years, 15 years?
Yeah.
Never had a single fucking problem ever until Trump ran for office.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just look
God
at that.
God knows
I mean,
all the kinds of shit that they did.
Yes. Far worse and far more. I mean, that guy has got greasy.
I mean, basically, it looks to me like this Colfag guy got all this money, didn't know what to do with it, was in over his head, and then was like basically founded a nonprofit. They dumped the money into it, and he's like, you can dip into that.
I know this Italian guy in Florida. He's like a real fucking. He's a real crack with this stuff. He's a. you know, it was all about the finances and how to play with this money, how to make the most out of it.
What they did is they said, like, we're not going to take any of the money. It's all 100% going to go. Now, for me, you know, I'm not even seasoned in this stuff, and I would be like, if you say that, that's probably a bad thing to say. You should probably not specify things like that, because you're getting yourself – that's where the fraud comes in, because it's like if people gave thinking – now, the people that gave probably don't even care if Colfax took a salary. They probably don't even care.
But I mean, the issue is something like half of the money you give to charity goes to someone's salary.
Right, and everyone understands that, and all the charities, the nonprofit, and now the Red Cross, it's like, what do they even do? You know, it's like these organizations, these charitable organizations, half of them are grifts, more than half of them are grifts, almost all of them are grifts, NGOs and such. You are giving money to pay the salaries of the people that work there so they can continue to do whatever gay ops they're working on. That's the first.
So this guy, it says here, I'm reading a bio on Badalato. It says, Badalato calls himself a hobbyist conservative. It says here, while liberalism isn't generally a word associated with Breitbart and Bannon, Badalato boasts that he's been an infrequent contributor to Breitbart News, formerly owned by Bannon, and his articles picked up on the Drudge Report, saying on his website, some mainstream political media analysts suggested the data articles were responsible for one of the largest national political narrative shifts of the election year. So he's like, you know, he's got like a big ego and shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, fucking, yeah, this guy is like, again, this guy's everything he's used to doing things by going the maximum you can and stopping just short of breaking the law. That's his thing. And now you just have to have like way more distance from breaking the law. Like, that's it. If you're a political dissident, you have to be like super, like, you have to have like three. You have to have, was it 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon away from breaking the law? Because fucking, if you are like even in an eyesight of breaking
the law. Well, here's the thing. It's not illegal to talk about in America. It's not illegal. In fact, it's been constitutionally protected to talk about theoretical violence, to theoretically talk about doing violence in a political context, even against a group. That is not something that's illegal or something you can get in trouble for. I mean, in theory, right? However, we make sure we never say anything like that.
Right.
Even in a heated moment, and people used to do it back in the day when this wasn't taken seriously, and when it was frankly less serious, and it was less serious partly because people could say whatever they wanted.
Right.
And so as a result of that, people just shoot their mouth off. And in fact, there's a bit of an advantage to Jews in that, because, you know, when you let people just shoot their mouths off, and then you later on go back and you know, investigate every single thing that they've said, it's you know, because people will say dumb shit. Like, everybody will at some point say something really stupid.
Right.
And but we don't do that. We have made ourselves very, very, very careful about any way we talk about those things, despite the fact that there is a Supreme Court standard on which this is considered protected speech. I don't want to ever be invoking that standard to defend myself in court, because it's just, it's not actually good rhetoric, and it's not worth it. It's not worth it. I think actually one of the things that frustrates them about us and is going to frustrate them with the NJP is a lack of these sorts of statements from us.
Right.
And lack of them historically. I mean, you notice, like, they don't really ever quote me. They say they'll characterize me, but they don't really have quotes. And look, I've said a lot of shit in my life, and I've said
I've said some stupid shit that I meant almost tongue in cheek, like in the past, like things that meant for hyper.
But it would be, you know, there is so much of our material,
and they quote you literally. But here's the thing with that. Now, I saw this firsthand. Now, when it came to stuff, their first strategy for containing things like the Daily Stormer and shit like that when it got big was to just do that. They would quote the authors and clutch their pearls, right? And usually, historically, that actually works. Like, that used to work more. Like, people would see an out-of-context quote and be like, oh, this is horrible. This and that. But then something happened where it wasn't actually like – it wasn't working. Like, they would draw up these hit pieces quoting people. Like, they would quote me, they would quote Anglin, they would quote you, they'd quote Spencer, and no one cared. In fact, people just make fun of them for it and, like, respond. And at some point, like, we started getting bigger platforms than people at the Ford. And so that's – it was really after Charlottesville that they totally changed tactics from passive – that kind of passive character assassination to now, okay, now we got to dox these people. Now we got to try and put them in prison. Now we got to figure out ways to gay-op them. Now we got to do like outright criminal shit, like encourage anarchists to physically attack them. Like that's the tactic they came up with after the first attempt failed. Yeah, being called an anti-Semite in public life by the media was usually a killer.
That was it.
But the problem was it was a killer only because Jews would stop associating with you and stop letting you speak on TV and in their newspapers and in their movies. But now in the age of independent media, that shit wasn't really working anymore. And that's when extreme deplatforming happened. They just outright – they're just, okay, let's just become China now. Like, they came to that agreement. So, you know, we always talk about how the right is becoming illiberal or post-liberal. But, you know, it's funny. The system itself is post-liberal.
Mm-hmm.
They don't believe in liberal values anymore, like free speech and stuff like that. Now, what are the long-term ramifications of that? I don't know. But they made a calculated decision to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what the average man thinks, but, you know – The number of people that say they can't express themselves politically anymore has skyrocketed compared to 2015 and 16.
Yep.
And it was bad back then. But it was bad in an informal way in the sense that you'd get anarchists coming after you. Maybe you'd get fired from your job. Remember when Tony Hovater got fired before Charlottesville? He got fired. People raised $10,000 from overnight. Just like that. I look at situations like Will Planer. He had that criminal case. They indicted him, and people raised $15,000 for him. And he got in. It was just shortly. He got indicted shortly before Charlottesville. Yeah. And again, this guy raised a whole bunch of money from people on the internet. And fucking A, look at that. He was able to get a good lawyer, and he was able to beat his charges. So the point is, like, they had to. Now we have to live in a system. We have to figure out a way to deal with a system that is openly oppressing you for your ideas. You have to keep your nose clean. You got to do everything literally.
It's navigable, but it's
– Yes.
You know,
yes.
We have to do
– And yes, they can oppress you anyway, but then if you have all your ducks in a row, everything in line
– Makes it hard. You have to make it as hard as possible. What you have to do and what I want to do, and this is one of the ways even in court – that I messed them up was that in order to keep that court case against me going, they would have had to have been nakedly and openly tyrannical, and they would have to nakedly and openly declare double standards, like laws that apply to you don't apply to them, or rules don't apply to them. We're going to enforce them against you and let them get away. Like, doing that stuff openly, they still don't want to have to do it. There's probably even some people in the legal profession for whom they find that shocking. Because even if in a case of, like, a pedophile rapist, they would get the benefit of those rights, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. This is not in the case of a political case. So it's like, it's quite remarkable. But I think that one of the reasons what we're trying here is going to go further than I think a lot of any other attempts at doing this in America has, because we've learned this lesson. We figured this out. We've learned what I think are some real hacks for how the liberal system oppresses you. I think one of the mistakes a lot of previous people have made is they didn't quite understand how the system works to actually screw you over. Or they either thought the basic rules would apply to them, which isn't true, or they thought that, they're never going to go after this or that, or we can, you know, these petty things, they won't make a huge deal out of it. It's like, no. Anything they can do, they will do. Like, they just will. Like, even to the point of, like, yeah. And so, like, I realized this when years ago, you know, we had a picture of, like, a lion on TRS that some guy that wrote an article had just posted there.
Yeah.
They found – either the guy who owned the picture found and got a Jewish lawyer, or they went out and sought out the guy that owned – that took the picture and owned it. to basically send us like all these threats of lawsuits and stuff. So we took the picture down immediately. And you know, you do have you under that law, you have the right to you have the protection of if you have 24 hours after notified. I took it down within 1 hour.
Oh yeah.
And he demanded like he wanted like $3,000 in like back royalties in terms of how long it had been on the site. So that's the kind of shit where do you really think that guy would have done that? Or had a Jew lawyer advise him on doing that? Had it been a site he agreed with politically or not?
Pedophile site.
Right, right, right.
Like the MAPS movement has a lion as its symbol and it use his.
Yeah.
Would he really complain about that like he did this? He probably wouldn't even know about it.
They probably wouldn't. That's what I'm thinking. He probably wouldn't even known about our site unless somebody.
Jews tipped him off and said, now here's some free money. Now you can
We're not even free money. This is free legal advice. Here's how you demand. You know, they probably literally had Antifa who were tracking us.
Yes.
Find him. Be like, oh, there's a picture of I think it was a cheetah. Maybe a cheetah. Some big cat. It was about somebody was talking about law of the jungle. I don't know. Probably something LARPy, but it doesn't matter. And I guarantee you that photographer did not know himself that was on our site. No, the Antifa found him, tipped him off, and we're like, here, talk to our Jewish lawyer, Murray Schwartzman. He'll tell you all the ways you can make demands on these guys. And, So you just can't, even things like that. So you just don't do that anymore. Like that was the last time I ever did something like that. And every time something like this comes up, I'm always like, well, you know, can we do this? Do we have the so-called rights to do this kind of thing? So got to be careful, man.
I mean, the main thing to take away from this is you make them angrier when you obey the law.
Oh, yeah.
They don't get mad when you Fed post. They don't get mad when you do stupid shit. They love that shit.
Makes you an easy target.
You know, I've been doing a lot of research on how the FBI works. Now, the mindset of a typical FBI agent, there are a few crusaders, like some ideologues, like, you know, like Antifa sympathizers and shit. They're there. But the rank and file FBI agent is just a bounty hunter. Jews, the ADL sets the bounties of what organizations and movements to increase arrests in, and they just execute it because for every successful prosecution, they get promotions, they get raises. Things like that. So they're bounty hunters.
Yeah, the ADL has instructed the FBI, your target is white supremacists. A little while ago, their target was actually, you know, Islamic extremists.
Right.
But so, really what it was is like anti-Israel Islam.
It's actually like, because they didn't have much to do before the Muslims, they had anarchists, like green anarchists, because they were like fucking, like there was some kind of timber lobby that had paid.
Yeah, well, they were like spiking trees and shit, dude. That's fucked up.
They gave. That's true, but the point is, the timber lobby gave money to the Republican Party in like 2000 or 2001, and the Republican Party then got the DOJ to target what they called green terror, eco-terrorism.
Yeah, they even talk about how before the Muslim thing, eco-terror was their focus.
And those were all anarchists, actually. Like, the same people that do Antifa stuff now were the ones targeted back then. And that's because, like, various interests, like coal companies and timber companies and shit like that, they were paper companies. They paid the Republicans to do that. So that was the bounty back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so FBI agents started utilizing all these resources to try and entrap them. And they did. They got a lot of them because they weren't expecting it. They got them for things like, you know, burning down animal, you know, freeing the animals in a laboratory and then burning it down and, you know, firebombing places and shit like that. The point is, though, is that the FBI like started treating this as some really serious thing. And again, reading the experiences of these people from back then, and they've written extensively about it. Some of the stuff really is remarkably – it rings still true to this day. It's like the playbook has hardly changed. For example, they go after people that don't have many connections but have a hot head. So for example, a guy – like if there's an FBI informant or agent at a meeting and there's a guy in there talking about violence, they actually said like whoever did that at these meetings, at these like environmentalist meetings would actually get automatically kicked out. But they weren't always FBI provocateurs. Some of them were just teenagers or people that were hot-headed and, you know.
Dude, the FBI, we don't even have to go further. They specialize in, like, gay-opping people that run their mouths.
Well, yeah, and so what happened was that they would select these guys who were often quarrelsome. Like, they would find people particularly that were quarrelsome and alienated people or kept Fed posting and people told them to stop and they wouldn't, got kicked out of groups. The FBI would follow them as they got kicked out. Mm-hmm. And then they would trap them in these elaborate bomb plots and things like that, the usual, you know. You know, that's kind of what I saw with the Aryan Strike Force. Like, the Aryan Strike Force, yes. I remember, is kind of is full of hotheads, guys that are a little shady. They like to talk about guns a lot and shit like that. So people kind of are like, well, I don't want those guys near me. It's, you know, it's Globate. And lo and behold, the FBI, a little while later, started investigating them. And basically, they entrapped them all in a plot where the FBI provided the meth, had people waiting to buy the meth, and actually provided the firearms that they were trafficking. So these guys are basically just sitting in the car going along for the ride as an FBI agent took them to another FBI agent and sold stuff to another FBI agent.
We talked about that a little bit on Tedious as well. But yeah, I mean, that's basically their political police. And as you say today, they're political bounty hunters, and they've been given the instructions to go after people like us. And they are very frustrated at their inability to actually, one, provoke an actual white terror attack or something that can be construed as such. I mean, they are just hoping for the next, like, distraught, like, mentally ill white person to do that so they can characterize them as a white nationalist. Problem is, the last person, there's also a likelihood that they'll have all this Black Lives Matter shit and crap like that all over their Facebook when they go off, you know?
Yeah.
Possibly an increased likelihood of it.
Yeah.
But, they want a white terror attack so bad right now.
Oh, yeah, and they're not getting it.
And they're getting pissed.
They're getting pissed because that just puts more pressure on them to prosecute the anarchists.
Yeah, because it's like because they can't.
And it's not, you know, after reading about their MO, I don't even think that even most of them are actually sympathetic with Antifa. It's just that there's no bounty in that.
Yeah.
There's no promotion in prosecuting anarchists.
They know who the boss is, yeah.
There's no money or promotion or fame or anything, okay? There's no Dino Capuzzo press conference when you prosecute anarchists, okay? You don't get a federal judgeship like Thomas Cullen. Cullen got a fucking federal judgeship after fucking railroading people in Charlottesville.
Yep.
Think of that. So you don't get that if you prosecute anarchists. In fact, you might even put a mark on your record if you do that. Because it looks like you're doing Trump a favor, right?
Yep.
So this is why they're mad. It's not they're actually a lot shittier than Antifa. They're actually they're just like soulless, like fucking soulless enforcers with no mind of their own. They're just totally amoral, and that's I think a good way to end this.
Yeah. So that's about it. But yeah. So just stay tuned to everything that's going on. keep listening to us. Also, just a quick thing. TRS is still TRS. Striking Mike is still Striking Mike. We will be talking about things related to National Justice Party, but we're not. It's not going to be like nonstop shilling for the party. Like, we're going to, despite the fact that both Striker and I are involved, we're still going to do our usual thing. Right. In fact, it's going to be very seamless. You're not even going to really notice that. Your content won't change, basically.
Everything's going to be the same. I'm going to keep writing for my publication, which is related to the party.
Our media ecosystem that we've created is going to stay how it is. It's not going to be like, you know, we're not just going to become like just party shills and you're going to have to join up or whatever, pressured.
Things at the beginning, let's be honest, are going to be slow.
Yeah.
Because things have to get off the ground, things have to be done, and so on. But the point is, it's there. Okay?
Like I said, our next national meeting is going to be in November. It's going to be after the election so that we can talk about it and clarify issues surrounding it and tell people what the game plan is for the next few years. Yeah. That's the idea. Until then, you know, we're going to just keep doing what we're doing. And so just... As Papa John says, stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Alrighty, let's play us out.
Stay tuned. Yeah. Yeah, I always forget to do the outro music. We'll be right back.
Mm.